Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 385. Terry Miller, the disc golf guy, alongside Johnny V. Here we are, second show of the year, and already making special cases and exemptions and considerations for none other. Yeah, I guess. For none other than the Dickersons. In just a few moments, we're going to have Chris and Brittany Dickerson.
And Chris Dickerson.
Thank you. Yes, we got to get that all correct. They're going to be joining us. We're going to talk about the big news that dropped today. And I know we kind of teased it out last week. We ultimately saw Chris say that he was stepping away from Prodigy. That left everyone hanging for just a few days. And here we are, fast forward. And earlier today, right on, what is it, January 11th, the big announcement came in, a four-year deal, and we'll get into some of those details. Other big stuff happening, of course, in disc golf. We'll talk about some of those things that are going on that have taken place in the last week. And I know this Dickerson news is big deal, but so was the 19th annual Jubilee down in the C-tier, Fairhope, Alabama, that I had the pleasure of filming for the weekend. So, of course, I'm going to give a full recap on that.
Oh, nobody can wait.
I mean, should we open? Should we lead with that story?
Just for like a half hour or so? maybe 40 minutes.
I did have an incredible time, and I will break that all down much later. But without further ado, we're going to welcome in our very special guest tonight. We, of course, have Brittany and Chris Dickerson coming in from Tennessee. Oh, do we hear a cat too? Some cats, some dogs?
Yeah.
Welcome, guys. How are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Good. You know, there's so much talk of contracts and money, real money, flying around in disc golf. And now you're certainly part of that conversation, as you should be, as one of the best players in the world. But man, what's your day been like?
You know, a lot of notifications, a lot of messages. That's about it. Yeah.
And you've responded to all of them? My phone in.
Someone did.
Brittany has tried to respond to a lot of people, and I also tried to respond, and we ended up sending a couple messages to the same person saying basically the same thing.
All right, so let's get a few things, I don't want to say settled, we'll get a few things straight right out there.
Well, first of all, let's introduce everybody.
What I was doing.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I was going to say, last week, you know, we had Ricky, and then Ricky's tour manager, Ari, and she helps in a lot of capacities. You guys have seen her out there. Tonight, again, another kind of unique situation. We've got, of course, Chris, who just signed, but then Chris's wife here, Brittany. And Brittany, not only are you this great support system and help and wife of Chris's, but you're also a disc golf pro tour photographer and doing a whole bunch of other things. So let's get started there. what has it been like for you to be on the tour full time, jumping in? And because we see a lot of different relationships out there, you guys are married. So what does this mean for you?
Yeah, so I came on the road with Chris in late 2018. We had just bought the camper, and the goal was for me to just make his life easier where he could just play disc golf and, enjoy that. So I basically kept doing that all of 2019. And then when 2020 happened, I realized I wasn't going to be able to be on the course with Chris. And I was also kind of trying to fill a void of what am I doing with my life? Like, I don't have a purpose, I felt like. So I started doing photography for Prodigy, and I did that all of 2020. And then for some reason, the Pro Tour ended up needing a photographer for 2021, which what actually happened was Alyssa decided that she wanted to be involved, but on a not location dependent basis. So we kind of struck a deal that she would edit for me and I would take the pictures, and it all worked out beautifully where she helped me grow my photography skills a lot in 2021, and I was able to get all of my own equipment. So moving forward, I am going to be going back to doing only off course photography so that I can be with Chris again during his rounds. So I'll be doing little things on the side and mostly just going back to being a good social media manager and all of that thing stuff. Yeah.
So to follow that up a little more, and again, you guys have a very different relationship than say last week with Ricky and Ari in that you're married. Are you officially or unofficially then, would you consider yourself his tour manager? Or, I mean, of course your wife first, but is she, okay, Chris is nodding
the question
yes.
With a big nod to the yes that that Brittany is the tour manager.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. Do you feel like you guys need more people?
Not at the moment. We've had people reach out and ask, like if they could run a social media or do these things. And it, I guess for me, it just doesn't make sense to pay someone for something that I have like a background in and that I now have time to do that I'm not going to be on the course next year.
Well, and it sounds like based on the post that was made today that Discraft is going to be supporting you in a lot of other ways now with helping build your brand, Chris. Does that help relieve some of the stress off of Brittany? Is that what does the future look like for that?
For example, we have been working on a logo the past few days, and I think we have kind of nailed it down. We've come to one that I think we all kind of feel good about, so that should be popping up within the next, what would you say, week or so?
I don't know when exactly, but yeah, we finally have one and we're going from there.
Yeah, so, you know, the logo plays into that, and so does like what she was talking about, the social media. And yeah, I think it's going to look good going forward.
So you've recently made this move from Prodigy to Discraft. You signed a contract 1 year, about 1 year ago, or maybe a little longer than that, for a renewal. What has changed in the last year that has now had you guys pursue a different avenue?
I think you've obviously seen a lot of disc golfers moving seats this off season, and I think that we're just all constantly like growing and evolving as humans and just trying to find our home and where our place is. And we're feeling like this is home, and we're just really grateful right now and really excited.
You know, there was a multi-year agreement that you had with Prodigy. Here you're signing into what everyone read as a four-year agreement. Do you at all hesitate or get nervous thinking about longer agreements, whether it's 3, 4, 5 years? Was there any thought? Well, of course there was thought, but what were some of your thoughts with regard to a length of contract?
kind of similar to Paul's agreement. So he signed, I think his first deal with Discraft was $1 million over 4 years. And that didn't go the full term. They renegotiated, I think it was after the first year.
I think it was after two and a half.
Either one. So it didn't go the full term. They renegotiated. So, I did sign for 4 years. So, you know, maybe they'll go the full term. Maybe the contract will be renegotiated before then. But either way, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
I think we're both really confident in how Mike and Bob take care of everything. And we know that they definitely have our best interests at heart. And, you know, his contract doesn't have like a limit on his earning potential. So it's going to be good.
So getting into a few of those details, and of course, as always, share whatever you can or you're comfortable with. Everybody wants to know, but what exactly goes into a contract of this nature, you know, and what was most appealing to you? But what goes into a contract like this? Can you give any specifics?
I think for us, it was just sitting down with Mike and Bob and talking about what we wanted and needed in a contract. And to our surprise, they were like, here you go. Here's everything that you asked for, plus a little more. I think it's just, you know, based on individual needs. Like, obviously, some people wouldn't. There's Sam for you.
There's Sam.
Oh, Sam, don't worry. You'll be taken care of as well. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to feel good to know, to have someone, we saw the video, we saw, you know, Paul greet you at the airport or however it was, and then bring you over to the Discraft warehouse. It has to feel good to know that someone like Paul has the confidence in Discraft. And as you said, he renegotiated for what I think everybody would argue better terms after 2.5 years. Discraft wasn't sitting with him and saying, well, let's count out your last 2 years. They decided to re-up. So that had to instill some confidence in you, huh?
Yeah.
For sure.
Is it clearly you're fierce competitors and on any given weekend you're beating him. Does it feel at all weird to join a team where you have one of the best players of all time and knowing you're going up and trying to beat him every single weekend, is there any kind of awkwardness there?
No, I don't think so, because, you know, disc golf is an individual sport. It's, you know, we are on teams and, you know, the majority of us share like friendships, relationships with our teammates. So whenever it comes time to a tournament, Paul's out there to beat me. I'm out there to beat Paul. And, you know, that's why we play the sport, is to win and, you know, give it our all. So I don't expect anything less whenever it comes tournament time. So, yeah, we represent the same team, but on the course, we're trying to represent the team to the best of our abilities. And by doing that, that's, you know, competing for the win.
So let's talk a little bit about this contract, or at least, like I said, kind of what Terry was saying, what you can talk about it. What does it all include? We've seen a lot of things, a lot of different things from manufacturers these days. Everything from your own custom line of discs to tour stamps to
travel stipend.
It sounded like, from what I read, you guys got an RV. Is that what? Can you talk a little bit about the RV and talk about what your contract over the next, we'll just say 4 years, is going to include?
Yeah, so we were previously traveling in our travel trailer and our truck, and we actually we got stuck at a rest area last year because our truck blew a fuel line.
Yep, fuel line busted.
So it's an older truck. It's a 2001, and it was getting to the point where I realized we were going to need a new tour vehicle. So we discussed that with Mike and Bob. But that was something that we planned to do on our own. We never expected them to be like, here's an RV. But it's the one that I think Chandler and Tim Barham were in a couple years ago. So it's like 31.5 feet long. It's a Class A. It's It's really nice inside. We're super excited about it. Discraft is paying for all the expenses involved with it. So that's obviously very huge for us, just to have that peace of mind and be like, here is something for you to travel in and for your family to be comfortable. And I've noticed that they do that with several players. You can tell they really want everyone to feel comfortable in their own way on the road. So that was a huge thing for me alone.
Yeah. And so to the first thing, when I think about our players traveling around, whether it's in a converted van or a fifth wheel or whatever, I think about some of the, we'll just say the gas expenditures, and the fact that Discraft is essentially giving you this unit to travel around and is taking care of the maintenance and of the cost to get it from point A to point B, I think alone is just incredible. And some may say, well, that seems obvious, but maybe it hasn't been for all of these years. You know, Disc Golf is certainly growing into those kind of relationships. Did you displace anyone from their home? Did you have to kick out anyone? Did you come in like...
Was Chandler still in there?
Yeah, like, hey, can you pack up your stuff? The Dickersons are moving in.
No, actually, when we started contract negotiations with them, they were like, well, we have this Class A, which is what you were wanting anyway, and it's just been sitting here for a year. So it kind of just worked out perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Now, Paul specifically has... talked about contracts becoming public, becoming kind of helping set a standard, raise a bar, all those types of things with numbers being out there. Do you guys feel like it's I know how Sam feels. Do you feel like the numbers that everybody wants to know, do you feel like those are in fact should be public information? And do you care about sharing them, or do you feel like that's private information for only you guys to worry about?
Me personally, I've always been like a private individual. I don't like talking about money publicly and stuff like that. I do think we're getting to the point where contracts should be at least somewhat public. That way, you know, within the industry, you should know like how you would compare. For example, let's say, so let's say, two players are, you know, competing for the win at these big tournaments, every weekend, and they don't know what one or the other is making. You know, one could be making $1 million a year. The other one could be making $500,000 a year. And if they're competing on the same level, all that is, you know, is I feel like if they're similar skill level and they have the same like accomplishments and stuff like that, or at least similar, they probably should be getting paid somewhat similar. So if one is getting half of what the other one is and they are, you know, basically the same, they're playing about the same, you know, I feel like that's a problem, because correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that's happening in the NFL, in the NBA.
No, as far as on the court or field, I think we know, because of the way NBA and NFL contracts and teams work, they've got salary caps and such, so which means all of that contract information is more or less public knowledge. And when you get into sponsorships, like you know, we don't necessarily know LeBron's exact deal with Nike versus Westbrook's exact deal with Nike or Giannis's. Actually, I think Giannis is on Adidas. I don't know. Anyway, we don't necessarily know those exact details, but as far as the on the field numbers, those are very public, because they almost have to be in order to make sure everyone's meeting salary caps and things like that. So,
yeah, and I guess my follow up to that would be then, where does that information start to come from? Is that players talking to one another? Is that a manufacturer saying, hey, here's what we're now paying p- player X and paying player Y. How do you feel like those conversations come about? How do they come up now, even, to give yourself any kind of gauge? Because I feel like there's a huge discrepancy between what player X is making versus player A right now. And like you said, they might be competing for the same win, you know, week in and week out. And there's huge discrepancies. How do those conversations even come about to learn these things?
I feel like right now we're at a point where a lot of players are not allowed to talk about their contracts. And so that, you know, keeps that communication from happening. So players don't know how they compare to other players. So whenever Paul, you know, comes out with his contract, getting $1 million over every year over 10 years, I think that allowed for the next big contract to come up, like Ricky. So I do think that, you know, Paul, his contract allowed for another big contract. And so I think both of those contracts are going to continue to open the door and allow, you know, the next one and then the one after that. And hopefully, you know, we'll continue to get these larger contracts and that will continue to get more and more public. So, you know, you should be able to kind of compare yourself, and see like where you're at, where you rank. So, and yeah, I think we're moving in the right direction.
Certainly. And one of the things that tends to be in part of these deals is tour series discs. Now you're walking into Discraft and kind of getting the best Discraft disc that might have ever been made. I might be biased. I have a rack of first run buzzes over there, but how did that come about? Because Paige Pierce had it last year. She declined it. My understanding declined it this year. Or maybe there was some extra knowledge ahead of time, but she went with one of her series discs for her tour series. How do you walk in and get the top slot?
I think I just got lucky, honestly. Whenever, you know, those talks came up, it just happened to be unchosen.
It wasn't luck, though. When we sat down with him and started talking about what his disc would be, you know, Mike made it very clear that the buzz is a disc that you have to earn to have in Discraft. And when they followed that up with, and we feel like you have earned it, you know, that was really special for us both to hear.
Yeah, you didn't get like the MRV or anything from like 2001. So congratulations on the buzz, by the way. I bought 5 myself today, so I'm pretty happy. I'm a buzz guy, so I'm excited to see what your new stamp is, honestly, because the robot chicken one that went out today was nice, but I'm really looking forward to the whatever kind of logo you're going to be able to throw on them.
Did you negotiate at all for like the return of the Typhoon, the Marauder,
Cyclone, maybe
any of those? Did you an Eclipse? Have you thrown an Eclipse? Tracer?
I haven't thrown an Eclipse. I've thrown an X clone before.
Okay.
So,
okay.
We actually have one. My dad used to play in college, and he gave us all of his like collector discs. So we actually have an X clone from a long time ago.
Yeah, we've got an X clone. I think there's a Hawk.
Yeah.
So you never know. There might be a premium plastic X clone coming out.
That was my first ace, was an X clone. So yeah. I'd be all over it.
I've got a box of them somewhere. Yeah, absolutely. Awesome.
Funny thing, my very first ace was with an Elite X. I might have gotten the plastic wrong, but it's an Avenger.
We found it yesterday, right?
Uh-huh. Very first ace.
Okay. Well, that actually kind of touches on a question that I had in the back of my head, which was, talk a little bit about, you know, most players or almost the world knows you obviously as a Prodigy player. Talk about your early days. What were you throwing? And then, you know, how quickly did you get sponsored? You know, kind of break that down for us. Because your history is not nearly as long as a Paul McBath or some of the other players that we've seen.
Right. Yeah, I've been playing, I think, 10 years this year. And I wish I could say, you know, I've been playing longer, because that would just be more fun. that's one thing I enjoy to do, is just play. So, yeah, whenever I started playing, like everyone else, just more than likely a mixed bag, and I had all different kinds of things in there. But I do remember throwing a buzz. I do remember throwing a zone. I know there were some more challengers. Yeah, and you know, those were like the staples back then, but there were more that switched in and out. I think maybe a force came in and out of the bag, but yeah. The buzz that I actually had right before I got sponsored has went back into the bag. So it's a really old disc.
Okay.
Those are the best.
Now, did you, in speaking to those, were, when you got started, were you throwing a mixture of other brands as well? I mean, you probably threw some Innova discs at some point. Was there a full mix of everything?
Yeah, for the most part, it was just a lot of stuff across the board.
So you're, and the board is blowing up asking the exact same question, so I guess we'll get to it now and maybe keep them a little quieter. You're known for being a putter. When you walk into Discraft, how do you choose your putter? Do you just leave with like five of every putter? You know, you got challengers and focuses and APXs and putters, PUTTR,
Hot item.
Yeah, exactly. It's very hot. The thumb track one, the putter. How do you decide what kind of putter you're going to use? Do you talk to Paul and be like, this is kind of what I like? Or do you just take a bunch home and practice with them? And then what are you going to putt with?
So the way I approached it was, I got an idea in my head, what, you know, should the putter flight be like for me? You know, everybody has their personal preference, whether it's a super straight disc, whether it's a disc that has a lot of fade or it has a slight fade or, a lot of glide, not so much glide, just, you know, a lot of different things factor in. For me, I do like a putter with a little bit of fade on it. So my first instinct was the Challenger OS, and got one, started practicing with that a little bit. And, you know, I thought I was liking it, but it was in CT plastic. So I like stiffer putters, but not like the stiffest putters ever. So I kind of got away from that. I worked with a few more, didn't really like the flight. It didn't line up with what I was looking for. And then I got a hold of some putter line, Challenger OSs, and those are doing it right now. So, I'm really looking forward to, getting to use those.
All right. And it's going to be exciting to see, because when someone's so proficient at putting like yourself, it's going to open everyone else's eyes to, oh, hey, this is, you know, this is his tool that he's going to. And yeah, it should be exciting for a lot of people. Of course, Discraft has got to be excited about the idea of, hey, here's another one of our runs that may get some new exposure.
Mm-hmm. Is there anyone else on the team that's using that particular putter that you know of?
Off the top of my head, I can only think of one, and that's Chandler Fry.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what I thought. Yep. Okay. And then when you're taking a look at the plastics, the molds, of course, since way back when, before you were sponsored, there's been, you know, quite an evolution of the discs that have come along. What is jumping out at you? And I don't need a full in the bag, but what are some of the things that you feel like are jumping out at you right now that will likely make it in your bag in one form or another?
Let's see. So the staples right now are the Force, the Undertaker, the Buzz, the Zone. Then there are more that I have a pretty good idea that they're going to make the bag. But like you said, you don't want an entire in the bag. So I will say the Buzz, I'm very excited about. The Undertaker, also very excited about. And I mean, the Force and the Zone are, you know, two great discs. So I would say those four are like the ones that I'm really looking forward to.
Is there a particular run of the Buzz or plastic of the Buzz that you're really liking right now? Is it like the Z, the X, the, you know, Crystal Flex? I don't know. The Discraft has a lot of different versions
or whatever,
of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm kind of messing around with the Z, the ESP, and the Titanium. I don't know which one is my favorite between the Z and the ESP. For me, the Titanium seems like it's a little more understable than the other two, so maybe better for woods and, you know, holding straighter longer, maybe even hyzer flip to turnover shots, depending on how beat in it gets. So, yeah, still working at it, but I really like the Z and the ESP so far.
Excellent.
So, Brittany, I've got to ask, since I don't see you out there playing often, do you sense is it newborn excitement for you? I mean, the contract is great and the new you know, some of the new things that go along with it, but do you sense and feel the excitement for Chris in terms of like just this whole new adventure that obviously you're going to be, you know, intimately involved with? Do you sense that? Do you feel that?
Yeah, I mean, it's been fun just to go watch him play and just he'll throw a disc for the first time and he's like, yes, that's how I want it to fly. He just gets so excited. So yeah, that's been really cool just to see him go through this new journey. It's been really exciting.
One of the things that you have been very vocal about in the past is your track. Hello?
Hello? Did we lose you?
All right.
We see you. Can you hear us?
Are you there?
Oh, we're here now. Oh,
okay, okay. Excellent. Well, one of the things that you guys have been very vocal about in the past is your travel, and now you have an RV. You always kind of said going out to the West Coast didn't make a lot of financial sense. Mm-hmm. You know, you're probably, even if you, unless you win the event, you're probably not going to break even on the trip. Is this going to change? I mean, do the numbers that you're now seeing from your contract, does that change your perspective on a West Coast trip? Because ultimately, the bottom line doesn't change. You're probably still not making money, but does it soften the blow? Are you going to change your tour plans to go out west now with the RV?
Yeah, so we are going to go to the All-Star. So we're leaving for 9 weeks at the beginning of February. Our previous longest trip was 8. So, yes, we are going to Vegas for the first time. We'll be there for Disc Golf Con and the tournament. We're also going to be in Arizona. I actually don't know where the All-Star event is yet for sure, but
I don't know if anybody does yet.
It's only a month away.
Yeah. But, yeah, so we are still not going, and I know people are going to be upset about this. We're still not going to Stockton OTB Open, and we're not going to, what's the other one?
Portland Beaver State.
Yeah. It's just, I think our sport's getting to a point where we're going to have to start picking our tournaments. You know, the Pro Tour only takes your points for your 10 best. Mm-hmm. So why would you go to every single one? You know? So for us, if we don't go to those two tournaments, we get a month and a half to 2 months at home for skipping two events. So why would we bother, you know? Mm-hmm. Driving out to Vegas and all that makes sense because we loop out and then we come back home. But that doesn't make sense to drive all the way to California, then Oregon, then drive straight back home.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I've said on the show multiple times that the Pro Tour card, with as many events as we have, whether it's going to be 14 or 16 or 18 in the future, if they're only going to take 10, it might start making sense for your Pro Tour card to only cover 10 events and then let the top players pick the 10 they want to go to and then start filling the rest with players. So with other players that maybe are on the up and coming, that's really good to know that what your schedule is going to look like.
Well, and to follow it up, you guys are also, Chris, due to your stellar play, you don't necessarily need to hit all of the events. You don't need to pull from you know, if you're skipping, you know, Silver Series events, that's likely not going to impact, you know, where you finish throughout the year at a huge level. So, you know, some people need to go to every event plus the Silver Series just to scrape into the end of the year championships. Chris, the ones he does show up for, finishes really well. So you're setting yourself up in a great way for that. I guess good play will do that. I don't know. Contracts. Jeez.
Yeah, I think we're only going to 2 Silver Series. Okay. And it's just because it makes sense on our 9-week trip, or we would just be sitting there doing nothing. But we're also not going to Europe. I was actually talking to someone, I think from Finland, a couple of days ago, and they were telling me the restrictions are getting more so again. We also don't really have someone to watch Sam when we fly right now. So that's a big concern for us that we have to think about because he's our child. But I don't want to go to a place I've never been and have to worry about getting stuck there to quarantine or something crazy happening. So I really want to go to European Open, but it's not going to happen this year. And hopefully it'll happen soon.
No, and that makes sense. And the way things are going in the world right now, I mean, we're in January. Who knows what's going to be in June or July? I mean, things could be much better. Or they could be much worse. So it's and those are decisions you need to start making soon if you want to not pay a ton of cash for for plane flights.
Now, Chris, you've said it before, and you alluded to it earlier, even tonight. You just love to play golf. It seems like find me a field. As in a competition or a competitive field, and sanction it however you want. I'm just ready to play golf. Is that going to slow down at all?
It'll slow down a little bit. Last year, I think I played the fewest tournaments that I have in 1 year to this date. Besides, obviously, like I think my first year playing, I played 2 events in 2013. Maybe one of those fell under my PDGA number. I think I played the first one without it. But, you know, for example, I signed up for a C tier today in Knoxville at the end of the month. So I'm itching to get back out and to play. I'm excited to, you know, learn these new discs. And I think, you know, that's a smart thing to do is play a couple tournaments or at least one, see how, you know, your discs are going to fly. Obviously practicing, you are going to have a good idea, but whenever it comes to tournament, you know, nerves kick in. More times than not, you'll see like worse conditions during a tournament than all of your practice rounds you've ever played on that course. Yeah, just putting yourself in a tournament situation and trusting the disc to do what they've done in practice. So, yeah, I think playing a few tournaments before, let's say, like your first big one of the year, it's a smart thing to do. But
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like I mentioned earlier, I just love playing, so I'm going to play as many as I can.
I think back to a couple years ago when Paul McBeth went to Discraft, and I feel like I try to ask it of every player that makes a major shift like this. Do you give yourself any grace period? Do you, and you kind of are touching on that, do you feel like, hey, I'm going to let myself get comfortable with these discs, and you know, maybe I don't win or don't perform quite as to my potential, but do you give yourself any grace period, or do you feel like, hey, by the end of January, I should still be able to win this tournament that I'm going to go play in the C tier?
I'm going to say no to the grace period. I think, you know, whenever you get those discs, for example, I picked up a disc today from the local store. We went out and ate dinner, and by the time we were done, it was like 45 minutes to an hour before sunset, and I went right back out to the course to practice throwing that specific disc that I got today. So I think whenever you receive those discs and you start practicing with those, me personally, I'm going to put in as much practice as I can to learn those discs, to get those flights down to, you know, so I know exactly what the disc is going to do every time. So I've had a couple months to kind of get an idea, since the last tournament of, 2021. So yeah, not much of a grace period, I don't think.
Well, sounds like you're a no excuses kind of guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going into the next tournament and I expect to play, you know, on the same level. Will that happen? I guess we'll see, but, that's where my expectations are, is, you know, to pick up exactly where I left off, if not better. And if I don't, I'm just going to practice even harder to get back to where I was or above that.
Yeah, and kind of, we'll say, the blunt answer that somebody would throw out, I think, in the comments is they just say, well, it's your job. And it is, but that doesn't, everyone still struggles. You know, your first day at a new job doesn't necessarily mean you're going to pick up everything and be off and running. Clearly, you're a skilled thrower. But there's still some nuances to, you know, learning every individual disc. And then for people like you, I mean, how do you feel about working in a disc? Because you're going to have discs that are obviously flying different when they're brand new versus when they get worked in. What are you throwing any against a tree or a wall or anything like that? Or are you just going to let them all naturally wear in? How are you going to go about that process?
That's a good question, because I did that today.
yes.
Specifically, so I have a Meteor that I'm trying out for hyzer flip to turn shots. Mm-hmm. And it's a little more stable than what I like or what I would like for that shot. But that's a good thing, because, you know, you can always beat a disc in. You can't stable up a disc.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized, you know, it's not doing what I wanted it to. I need to hit some trees with it. So I picked out a pretty good grouping of trees on one hole. They were probably 75 feet or so away. I threw it. I split every single tree. I didn't touch a thing. And
you're too damn good. Stop.
It's the Meteor. Well, it's not Chris. It's the Meteor.
Well, I mean, I was trying to hit the trees and I missed them. So I picked it up. I threw some more shots and I got down to that disc in my bag. And I was like, okay, I'm going to hit these trees. They're good sized trees. I'm going to hit them. I threw it again. I hit the same exact gap and I didn't touch a tree. But, you know, I'm going to continue to beat that disc in. I'll get to, you know, right up on the tree if I need to. Oh. And that's how I've beat some discs in the past. Throwing them and letting them beat in naturally is good. But if you need to get a disc to very understable quickly, nothing like some hard throws into a tree, a tee pad, or whatever else you have.
See, Chris is lucky, because I... much like you, many years ago, I did the same thing with a Meteor. I loved it. It was just a touch stable. And I thought, well, if I just hit a tree or two, which I'm more prone to do than you are probably. And I had it flying perfect for about 2 weeks. And then you hit one more tree and now you're like, oh, man, that's... But I don't think you have that as nearly as bad of an issue as I do with that.
So, yeah, you have 1045 rated problems. Oh, I couldn't hit a tree even when I was trying.
Yeah, I couldn't hit a tree if I tried. Gosh.
Jeez.
So with the new contract, you guys are in a relatively new house. You've been there for, is it over a year now or not quite? Okay.
We moved in May when we finished construction, yeah.
And you, the house is probably to your liking for the most part. Is there anything with the new contract that you can now look at and be like, well, I think we can afford the nicer, you know, couch that we wanted? Are you going to get any extra amenities for the house?
No, we built an 806 square foot house, and it was a custom house. So like the island that we're sitting at right now, Sam's crate is also inside of it, and it has like a little barn door. So there's a bunch of little custom things that we had done. I wanted a small, nice house, and we bought all new furniture before we moved in. There's a few things our builder has to come back and fix. But besides that, yeah, the house is good. I built a small house, so I couldn't put a bunch of stuff in it. And we're both very frugal and like to save and invest and do smart things with our money.
Any Bitcoin? I mean, was that part
not
of the
yet.
Deal?
Not yet.
Talk to Ricky. He'll get you set up.
Yeah, I guess this would be a Smashbox exclusive. We did buy a car to tow behind our new RV.
Tell me, is it a Mustang?
No.
Nobody tows a Mustang ever. I've never in my life seen someone tow a Mustang.
I know. I just know Brittany has very particular taste when it comes. They both have particular taste of the cars. Go on.
He's referring to worlds. Yeah. We had a beautiful CX-9 rental car, and Chris found something wrong with it and took it back the next morning and got a Mustang. But anyways, yes, we got a 2019 Toyota Corolla. It is a manual transmission so that we could flat tow it with all four wheels on the ground.
Okay.
Paul and Hannah have been a huge help with trying to find a vehicle, answering all of our silly questions. We were actually looking at 2020 Corollas and pretty close to buying one. And I was texting with Paul about, I think I asked him, when you flat tow, does it like put miles on the odometer? And he sent me this little thing from Toyota's website, and the 2020s that are manual transmissions are not flat towable. Oh. So we would have been in big trouble. So we ended up finding a 2019 through CarMax, and they shipped it to our local CarMax. So yeah, we're super happy with it.
Mm. CarMax, not a sponsor of Smashbox yet.
No, but they could be.
If they want to be. All right. So Toyota Corolla 2019.
Okay. And you guys already know this. Like, shopping for new and used cars is just a whole nother world right now than what it was, a year or 2 years ago, obviously due to the microchip shortage and all that other madness. But it's pretty crazy out there shopping around. Now, do you envision that being attached literally everywhere you go pretty much this year, or will that be on the longer or the shorter trips? When will you be pulling it?
Yeah, we're taking the RV everywhere this year. And we are taking the car in this week to get fitted for all the things that it needs to be able to be towed behind the RV. So yeah, it'll go everywhere because we have to leave the RV plugged in for everywhere. So.
So for Johnny, who's not familiar with RV driving and all the details, what class A, stipulations, special permits, license, what do you both have one? What's required? What's not? Break it down for us.
So you don't have to have a special type of license for an RV that I know of anyway. I believe that you have to get your CDLs whenever you are. What's the way to put it? Maybe transporting goods and stuff like that. So obviously tractor trailers, you have to have a CDL. I think maybe even bus drivers. I would assume bus drivers of all sizes need their CDLs. Just certain stipulations. But yeah, I think no matter really the size of the RV or even a fifth wheel pull behind trailer, I don't think you need any kind of special license. At least I haven't been notified of that or anything.
No one's caught us yet, so we're good.
But don't worry. The right. State trooper will notify you if needed. Yeah. They will certainly. Now, will that impact who's driving? Or does that normally fall on the shoulders or the foot of one or the other of you?
Yes, one of us will be driving 99% of the time.
I will probably take the wheel only on the interstate and only if he has to get up and go pee.
Okay.
Honestly.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. Driving the RV home, I noticed it's a decent amount wider than the truck and trailer that we were pulling. There's only about a foot to a foot and a half on each side in between the lines. So it took a little bit of getting used to.
You said you got flipped off within 20 minutes.
I probably did. Anybody that's driven to Michigan that's from, another state, they put a lot of salt on the roads up there. Mm-hmm. And, that doesn't react the best. It eats away at the roads.
It's the worst roads ever.
They're not the best roads. Mm-hmm. So that mixed with driving a bigger vehicle and getting used to it, probably didn't stay inside the lanes 100% of the time. I like to think of it as, they were just waving, but
congratulating anxiously. You. Like, hey, look, there's the Dickerson.
Yes. Like, oh, look, the Discraft RV.
Well, he did. So he went up there by himself. He flew up and drove the RV home. And we had, 3 to 5 people message us and say like, hey, I saw you on the road. Congrats. I won't say anything. Mm-hmm. So shout out to those people. You're absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Y'all did great.
For letting us announce on our own. I'm like, you're coming home in a billboard for Discraft. He said these people like pulled up behind him and came around really quick, and he like pulled his hood up. And he's like,
yeah, I noticed. I just so happened to look in the mirror, and this car was really close behind, and I was like, that's kind of odd. And then they got over, and they were just like slowly creeping up. So I had a hoodie on. I pulled the hood up and kind of like pulled it even further on the left side as they passed. But we had a few people reach out and say like, hey, saw you and congratulations. So thanks to all y'all for being good sports. And
yeah, that is good. And then I was gonna say, even like if you had a different driver, or if Brittany was driving, that wouldn't have helped. Everybody would have known. You guys would almost had to hire somebody totally different. Now along those lines, obviously we're in Wisconsin. We're used to some of those conditions you spoke of, but I ended up being kind of laid over Friday night into Saturday in Tennessee, in Nashville, due to the snow that you guys got. And somebody told me that usually you guys get roughly, at least in Nashville, roughly 5 inches a year, and they had gotten 6 in one night. So clearly Nashville wasn't ready for it. So my question is, what was it like coming down? Now you're driving this massive, RV. How were the conditions for you?
Yeah. So in Michigan, there was, snow on the ground already, and leaving, besides the roads having potholes and stuff like that, they were clean. There was no snow. There was no ice. Down through Ohio, same thing. There was snow in the grass and stuff like that, but the roads were taken care of. Now, once I got into Kentucky, different story. So we're getting closer to Nashville, like what you were talking. I actually stayed with little Zach mm-hmm. Arlingus. Sorry.
You don't know how to say your friend's last name.
No, I did, and I corrected myself, obviously. So I stayed with little Zach, and once I left his house and started home, then that's where I ran into the worst road conditions so far. There were 3 lanes of traffic. 2 of the 3 lanes were not completely covered with ice, but there was solid sections of ice in 2 out of the 3 lanes, so everybody, moved over to the cleanest lane, and it was moving at a slow pace. But, after a little while, roads cleared up again, and, it was smooth sailing. But
you can be in a 4-wheel drive car and,
ice doesn't care.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess, were there any scary moments for you? I mean, you were probably slow, but was there anything truly scary?
No, the only thing that made me a little nervous was, it wasn't gradual whenever the ice started, showing up on the road. It wasn't like, oh, here's a little bit. And then it just kept growing and growing. It was just like it got to a certain point, and it was almost like, one county did their job clearing the road. We changed counties, and it's like, we'll just get to it whenever.
It's going to melt tomorrow anyway. Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah.
There was one part that it just showed up out of the blue, and I was just like, oh my goodness, what are the odds? So, slowly and safely make your way to the open lane. And
okay. Yeah. good to hear that the travels were safe and that for the most part people cooperated. It sounds like there was a leak or two, but for the most part everybody cooperated and you guys got to have, you know, this really big moment today. There was, of course, the murmurs and the rumors and everything that, you know, went around. But I think by and large, most people were either reaffirmed or even flat out surprised today, which is great.
Yeah.
Back to the kind of the contract end, or I'll say philosophy. I feel like you guys, as you said, you're frugal. You built a brand new house that was intentionally under 1,000 square feet, and you guys don't put off this vibe of bling and worrying about all sorts of other just really ultimately materialistic things. Do you feel like that hurt or helped maybe some negotiating in your contract? Do you feel like you, Chris, you maybe qualified for a larger amount, but yet maybe you didn't seek it out because you're not as worried about it? Or am I just making stuff up? Is that possible?
You're making it up.
Well, I would say this. Maybe it could have been a possibility, but no, whenever I received the offer from Discraft, I felt like what they gave was a very fair offer. And, I think, being honest is a huge thing. So whenever I felt like this is a very fair offer, I feel like they met all the needs that we had asked for. There's no need to ask for more. I think going into a relationship and just being honest and not being greedy and stuff like that. I think that's a great way to start a relationship.
I think when you're projecting, 7 figures over 4 years, you can't really complain.
No, you can't complain at all.
Some could. And that's why I asked.
If you win the next 3 world championships, your thought process might change on that 4th year. But we'll see. I mean, we wish you the best of luck with that.
Yeah.
But
I think that, what we watched Discraft do with Paul with updating his contract, if we got to that point, like, we have no doubt that they would absolutely do the same thing for him. So
you left your old sponsor, but you also left behind your VII sponsorship. Was there a particular reason for that? Is this a Discraft thing? Because one of the posts you made, you are also, clearing out some of your old clothing, which included your, iconic red and black plaid. Are we going to see anything like that in the future? Is there something else coming up? Fill us in a little bit.
We're working on it.
Yeah, we're working on it. Things are, still kind of falling into place, but there was a reason that we parted ways, and I'm not sure if, I can really discuss that or not, but we'll see what happens, and you all may end up being surprised.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, sounds to me like they're going to buy VII and become the new owners.
I don't think so.
Take it over, and then it's going to be all the
it's all the plaid. C-deck line. Everybody gets plaid. You want to be sponsored? You have to wear plaid.
And you have to wear it to work
every day.
Okay. Some would say clearly this year, maybe more than ever, because of all these moves, lots of conversation goes into the player, how you're performing on the field, how you're performing on the course. As you said, you played the least amount of tournaments this year. It looks like roughly 34.
Oh, wow. 34. Geez.
I know.
You missed a few weekends
for about $50,000 in payout. But then there's also all of these sponsors and sponsorship negotiations. Also, look at your social media presence, your overall presence, and lots of those factors. Was there any conversation about
requirements?
Yeah, requirements or specific things that, or like you said, you're just going to get help with it? What does that look like? And yeah,
I don't think we had any requirements. It's just like, obviously we want his brand to grow and we want to build that and we want him to become as marketable and have as much of a social media presence as we can. So I don't think there were any requirements. for that. But yeah, it's just, you know, everyone doing their best to get us to the best place possible.
Yeah. And obviously if, let's say if I were to promote myself and, a sponsor were not to promote me, you know, that's only going to get us so far. So same thing, if the sponsor were to promote me and I don't do any work, it's only going to get them so far. It's really working hand in hand and just, you know, both parties promoting, not just the player, but the player and the brand. And I think that's where you'll see the most, income.
Yeah. And you spoke on, way at the top of the show, you said that your earning potential is not capped. It's not limited. What are some of the ways that you can earn more money, with Discraft?
Lottery tickets.
If I take all of my bonuses and I invest those in lottery tickets,
duh.
You know, the opportunities are endless.
That's right. I mean, everyone knows if you buy the entire roll of scratch offs, you're bound to win.
Yeah.
I mean, you're bound to win at least a little bit.
Right. Yeah. So we obviously finished his logo stuff today with just picking a design. So very soon we will have like ChrisDickerson.com where he'll have apparel and all of that. So that's going to be huge for building his brand, obviously. and yeah, so there's a lot of things that we're super excited about.
Yeah. So specifically, and a good example of ways to, increase your income by being a sponsored player is to promote yourself, promote your brand. And today was a good kind of way to judge that. We released the Buzz, the special edition Buzz, and it seemed like we got a lot of positive feedback about that. The post getting shared quite a bit, a lot of comments, a lot of interaction on the posts. So obviously, the more that you get in front of people, the more likely people are to see your products and more likely people are to buy your products. So yeah, just making yourself more marketable and stuff like that. You know, it can't really hurt.
Are you, I think of a few other players who clearly sponsored by Discraft, maybe even have their own branding and website. Are there any other sponsorships that you're actively seeking or looking for right now, whether it be a bag or even, you know, some of the retailers? You know, we see, I think of Ledgestone, which is in a unique scenario in itself because of how massive they are. But are there retailers and other people you're looking to still partner and align with? And if someone is interested, how should they go about reaching out or talking to you?
Yeah, there are still a couple more, at least a couple more sponsorship opportunities that I'm kind of looking for. And
we've already secured a bag sponsor, and we'll announce that in a couple of days.
We're here.
Get out here.
I hope it includes a spot for a kitty cat, wherever your bag is.
Does it start with a U, a G, or a P?
I wish I could share a picture with you and not give it away of when we got the bag and my cat slept in it for 5 days straight. I'm not joking.
So it's kitty approved.
Well, let's do this. When that picture is released, where can they find it?
Yeah.
Maybe on your Instagram?
I guess your Instagram, yeah.
Well, oh, yeah, the picture, it'll be on Instagram, Facebook, those two platforms.
But if anyone wants to contact Chris about a sponsorship, you're welcome to do it on Instagram, Facebook. Please don't do that. It's a mess in there. Or you can email him at chrisdickersondg@gmail.com.
Okay. Okay. So you mentioned bag. Is there anything else that's been officially secured and locked in? So, and my example would be, hey, I make some form of rosin/chalk bag. Do you already have something like that secured or no? Is everything up in the air?
everything's up for grabs at this point besides the bag.
And the discs.
Well, yeah, of course.
I'm just teasing. I'm just kidding.
Seeing the cat as well, is it gonna? How full is the RV gonna be? Is it gonna be big enough, or is this gonna be like Noah's Ark? You know, riding down the riding down the interstate.
The cats stay home. Stay home. Thankfully, we're on the same property as my mom now. Mm-hmm. And we have a screen porch, which they love. So she lets them out there pretty regularly and, you know, is able to come check on them. And we actually are getting, I'm calling her our house manager to kind of help us when we're gone for like 9 weeks at a time. So just do some like light cleaning and take care of the cats and go through our mail and just things where I'm not coming home from a 9 week trip where we leave 2 days later and trying to do everything.
Yeah. I was going to ask, now I lost my thought. Sorry. Where was I going to go with that?
I don't know.
Something about, I don't remember. Anyway, anything out of the ordinary for the 2022 season? I know you talked about the events that you're going to, the few that you're going to miss. Is there anything that's, I'm going to say, like, just what we wouldn't expect? Or are you going to miss one relatively large event because you're actually going to, you're actually going to some other large event, but it's not necessarily a pro tour? Is there any kind of change-ups or uniqueness in that way?
I mean, we don't go to Portland Open every year because you play, well, for what I said earlier, and you play Tennessee State's 45 mm-hmm. minutes from home.
Yeah. Besides that, no, I don't think there's going to be any kind of curveballs or anything like that. Could be wrong, but as of right now, off the top of my head, no, not really.
Branding, marketing, and everything that goes along with that. Is there any, I guess you kind of touched on it with regard to maybe some clothing, but is there anything that's going to be that you're working on that's out of the ordinary in that regard? You know, because there's so many different ways you could go with it. Chris, I know you do lessons, and that's unique in largely in its own way. And you do these, you know, usually completely online lessons or videos back and forth is one of the ways you do it. But I think of apparel, hats, the shirts, all the accessories. Is there anything else that you guys are developing that you can or can't share with us?
No, it's all so fresh right now. I think we've been working with Nate Heinold and Paul from T-Box. Mm-hmm. So I had a meeting with them today because he was gone playing. But so we're just starting those conversations. So we don't really know exactly yet, but it's really nice to talk with them and they have a direction and we have an agenda and, you know, they have a plan. So we're going to see where we end up.
And speaking of those conversations today, the big announcement, was there anything that either made you chuckle or stare into each other's eyes or throw your phone down? Any wild reactions out of you guys today by anything that was said, good or bad? I'm sure you were flooded with messages, right?
Yeah, we weren't together when we announced because he went to play. our friend Charlie did post a video of him in his Paige Pierce hoodie throwing a Discraft disc like an hour before we announced. So I called Chris and I was like, hi, can you just have him take it down? He can repost it in like 20 minutes. Just
what?
I don't know if he didn't know that we hadn't posted yet or he didn't see the Paige Pierce or what.
what he wanted to do was take a video of me out on the course playing and trying not to get any logos or, you know, the names of discs or anything like that in the shot. So he could get a little bit of interaction like, oh, what's he throwing? Stuff like that, and kind of build some hype. Didn't go as he planned. You know, very first one had a huge Paige Pierce logo on my hoodie.
We love him anyway. It's okay.
Yeah, so...
I mean, you're a Paige Pierce fan and friends and all that. So, I mean, that alone isn't have to be something that throws it off. But, yeah, unfortunately, it probably does. Ricky, yeah. Speaking along these lines, Ricky talked about, like, just trying to go out and practice. Kona talked, maybe it was Kona too, or both of them, or one or the other, talked about, like, trying to go out and play golf and then stay under the radar. Because if you show up on a course and somebody sees you unloading your bag, whether they're doing it in a sneaky way or not, they can walk past and see what discs are lying on the ground. Did you have some of those challenges, or were you just able to, did you just practice on your own property? What did you do?
I didn't really have challenges like that, because most of the time I go and play, it's early in the morning. People haven't made it out to the course yet. But whenever I play multiple times throughout the day, or people happen to be there whenever I'm there, I feel like everyone that I encountered was very respectful. You know, they could have been curious. They could have just been wanting to play around together, but they're like, hey, you know, are you playing by yourself? Can I play with you? It's like, well, kind of can't. I'm sorry. You know,
we went last night. Was it last night to the course?
Uh-huh.
And this guy was like, hey, Chris. And we waved at him and he goes, is it rude if I ask where you're going? And we were like, you'll know soon.
Yeah. I was like, no, it's not rude to ask, but, you know, it'll probably come up within the next day or two.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just keep an eye out. So I was lucky enough. People were very respectful whenever I think that kind of thing came up. So, yeah, it was good.
Did you get any advice from anyone, and whether that's a Paul or maybe even someone outside of disc golf? Was there any advice along this huge transition and journey in these last few months? Was there anything that sticks out to either of you? And it doesn't have to be golf related. It could be literally about anything that applied here, though.
I'll give you some good advice yesterday.
So two things that came to mind. First, Paul reached out to me and said, like, hey, you know, since you're going to be throwing new discs, one thing that I did whenever I transitioned over was I tried to make certain discs fly like discs that I was throwing. And he said that kind of set him back for a little bit. Because, you know, the discs aren't going to fly the same. Mm-hmm. You've got to learn. It's a completely different mold. You've got to learn how this disc flies and, you know, throw it how it's meant to fly, instead of trying to use it in a spot of an old disc that you were throwing, or, you know, something kind of like that. So that was some pretty good advice. And some advice I received a long time ago was from Nate Doss. And, you know, I still think about it every now and then. And he said, you know, it doesn't matter who you're sponsored by. If you're good enough, you can throw every disc. You should be able to compete with every disc. So, you know, as long as you put in the time and effort. So those words of wisdom have kind of stuck with me for a while. And I really appreciate him taking the time to reach out and, you know, say those things.
Did he get your name right when he
have you talked to Nate since the signing? I mean, he was such a big discraft person, but obviously he's a little bit more removed in the off season. Have you had a chance to talk to him at all, or no? Is not.
No, not yet.
He did message Bob, though. So Bob sent us a little screenshot from what Nate had said today. Mm-hmm. So
great.
Now, with what you just said, which I obviously believe and fully support and everything else, does that almost make every manufacturer, like, just, I don't want to say cringe, do they almost pause for a moment? Because I think we're proving a lot of people make great discs, but you have to be a good player. And if you're a good player, you could throw any brand. I mean, is that kind of counterintuitive to what well, we make the best discs in the world. Well, do you? Because everybody makes good discs. So I guess the question is, how important is it, the brand and the specific mold?
So this is my opinion on it. The more that manufacturers continue to make discs, you know, I feel like we're getting to a point where it's harder to make a disc that hasn't, you know, been made yet.
Mm-hmm.
At least it's going to be a lot tougher to create like a new, never before done disc. Discs are going to be kind of similar to one another, unless they like change the standards and guidelines and stuff like that. But, with so many companies emerging and with so many companies making many, many discs, that's covering most, if not all of, the shots somebody needs in their bag. So I would say 10 years ago, sure, maybe 1, 2, 3 companies, would have had like a leg up on the rest of the competition just because they had more molds and a little bit more diverse flight chart. But now it kind of seems like everyone's making a lot of discs. They're making good quality discs. So you just got to find what you are, you know, comfortable with, what's goes best with your preference and style of play. And yeah.
And a lot of that is, I mean, every manufacturer's plastic itself is a little bit different. So if you enjoy somebody's specific plastic, I heard someone on one of the web boards go, oh man, I really hope Chris throws it was a Glow ESP Flex Undertaker. And I was like, do they make that? And he's like, I think they had a special run of it one time. And I'm like, that's awfully specific because they wanted one. And I'm like, okay, like I hope you get your wish. But I think that with the amount of plastic that's out there these days, there is clearly something for everybody.
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to what I was saying with like the preference. As soon as you said flex, that's not my go-to. I don't like gummy discs. I don't like flimsy discs. Now, I know a lot of people that do, and that just goes back to personal preference. Yeah, that's probably not something that you're going to find in my bag. Maybe on a special occasion, if let's say
it gets really cold.
Yeah. That's. I actually just talked about that today. It was probably 30 degrees whenever I was playing my round, and somebody handed me a flex disc. And I was like, yeah, you know, this isn't bad, but whenever it warms up,
that's a glowing review right there.
Well, and that's just preference.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Whenever
it
gets,
what plastics do you actually like?
ESP, Z, titanium, Putterline. Yeah, all those. And I do throw a soft zone every now and then. So that's like the exception. I tend to not like softer discs, but for certain shots, maybe one will pop up in my bag every now and then.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Brittany, what would you say with all of the new, you know, all of everything that's new that's going on for this year? What specifically are you looking forward to the most? Is it a new place? You know, again, him and his new plastic, like what,
getting to walk with Chris again.
Yeah. What are you most looking forward to in 2022?
Oh, there's so many things. We've never been to Vegas. I don't think I'm going to enjoy being there for 2 weeks, but I am excited to go and just, you know, have the Vegas experience, while still going to bed at 9 PM every night. But
that's what I do too.
If anyone's wondering why this podcast started an hour earlier, it was because I begged Terry, so I didn't have to stay up so late. But yeah, I remember when I was working last year, I loved it, but I was also so exhausted because if I'm going to do something, I give it 1,000% of my being. to the detriment of my health or whatever else. So I'm really excited to just be able to like focus on being with him. Is he drinking enough water? Like, is he eating okay? Is he taking his supplements? And then just getting to walk the course and just be there and be present with him again. Yeah, I'm really excited for that.
What will your photography look like? You said off the course, but I mean, what, how do you envision what your workload will look like? And are you up for commissioned work? What's kind of the plan there?
Yeah. So his bag sponsor, we've already, you know, discussed that I'll be doing some work for them this year. Like for example, in 2021, I did Colton and Kona's engagement pictures while we were in Vermont. While we were in Nashville, I did the McCade shoot for Paul, for him and McCade to be able to have photos to market. So there's always little things like that that the players will need or that companies need that I can do. And if I can, you know, take my camera on the course and it's something where I can be on his card with him and just snap some pictures here and there, cool. But yeah, if I can't just be with him, then yeah, it has to be off course or on his card. That's pretty much our options this year.
And you will or won't want to do any of the UDIS scoring? Is that up your alley?
Oh, I don't care at all. I don't care at all to do. I know some people like freak out and they're like, I'm here to caddy, but it's the easiest thing in the world. I don't care one bit to do UDISC at all.
All right. I'm always helping UDISC kind of try and wrangle up or put out, cast a wide net, you know, because there was an all out. There was almost a, I think everyone had to touch their nose this week and nose goes for who was going to do the live scoring down at the C tier. It was, they wanted to stay clear of it. So I'm always trying to help UDISC wrangle up more people.
I think a couple times this year when I wasn't working, I did the PDGA live. They seem to always have someone for UDISC, but like none of the players wanted to do PDGA live when I was just walking. So I typically did that because that was like the official score. And I know Ari said Ricky had like a scoring issue this year on that. And so she started making sure to do the PDGA live. So that's, if it's going to be official again next year, that's probably what I'll be doing when I'm on his cards.
Chris, this will, I think, as we start to wrap up for you guys, so you can, you know, call it a night. When you saw and heard of the specifics, whether it was Kona or maybe more, certainly more applicable for you probably would be Ricky, what's your reaction to that? When you're seeing these peers and these other players, what was your internal reaction to that?
You know, I think at first I was like, you know, that's great. I'm glad that contracts are continuing to get bigger and bigger because, you know, that's not just going to stay at the top. That's going to continue to trickle down and it's going to be from, you know, the very top to the very bottom of sponsorship levels. I think it's going to affect all of those, meaning, you know, you could be getting paid the big bucks, whereas people who are sponsored by a disc golf manufacturer that are getting, let's say, 50 discs a year, maybe that gets bumped up to 75 or 100 just because of you know, the amount of money that's coming in. So I think it affects everyone all across the board, and it's a good thing overall.
And they're all our friends. Like, we're so happy to see all of our friends succeeding and living their dreams, and everyone just roots each other on. Like Ricky sent us messages today, like, I'm so happy for you guys. And we were doing the same thing for him. I love this community. It's the best group of people ever. I can't say enough about the disc golf pro tour, touring pro community.
I know you're, he already plays for Dynamic. He's renewed with Dynamic. I know another good friend plays for Innova. That's not changing with Kelvin. But does you moving to Discraft, any chance you're going to not be friends with Melton and Heimberg anymore? Is there any chance we could make that happen? No?
Well, I'm not friends with Zach anyway, so...
Okay. Perfect. Does he know that yet?
I tell him every time I see him.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
He's that guy that just shows up to the group party,
okay,
right?
So we're like, just making Zach's it Smashbox official. Okay. Okay. Yeah, because he puts on a good Zach front shows- like your friends.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Zach always shows up to the group, but you can always count that he's going to be late. So
okay.
Terry's over here trying to start some drama.
Not
I'm
at
sorry.
All.
If you base your friends on who they play for, then that is very silly.
It certainly, and we find that within the disc golf community that to echo what you guys just said, you know that so many of our top players literally will go play pickleball or we'll go rafting or we'll go enjoy a Monday at a theme park or whatever. We see that every single week, or at least behind the scenes that it goes down, and that is absolutely beautiful. I mean, like you said, Chris, it's an individual sport. You're on a team, but at the same time, you guys are all friends first, and I think that continues to shine and be awesome. So along those, how can people support you? What right now, outside of the, you know, possible sponsorship, you know, offers they could send your way, but if people wanted to go out and support you guys, what's the best way for them to do that right now?
Buzzes.
Link in bio.
Buy Buzzes.
On Instagram and Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, but Buzzes are good.
Which ones? Just to be clear, let's get it all. So it's because you don't want somebody buying a D buzz. They what buzz should they be buying?
So right now it is I think it's a limited edition of Chris Dickerson buzz. That's
ESP.
The one that is out now. ESP, yep, swirly mm-hmm. ESP. So you know that
has
becomes
a really sick stamp on it. Yeah.
Yep, and it's the first chance to get a disc with my new signature on it.
Yeah, we changed the signature.
Well,
did you start writing left-handed?
She wrote it out and like, Chris, this is how your signature looks now. I'm your manager. Please practice this.
We didn't go out on New Year's Eve like we had planned because he spent hours watching videos and like trying a bunch of different signatures. And yeah.
Wow, you like, wait a minute.
Why?
Like watching, yeah, to like, make it more legible.
Just better.
Not really legible. Yeah, it just sucked overall. If I'm being honest, my old one was just there was a C and
squiggles,
like half of an H. There was some squiggles to end it out. There was a D. I don't know. There wasn't really an I or a C. There was like half of the K, the upper half, and then, you know, some scribbles to end that out. It wasn't the best. So I was looking for something that, yeah, would look a little bit better and just, you know, not take as much time. For example, at like D-Glow this year, as soon as we finished our rounds, we counted up the score after we confirmed those. There was a line of people wanting autographs and stuff like that. So it's great. I mean, I love that people are out there, but there are some players that have a very hard to do signature, at least like it's time consuming. And you know, that's kind of what played into mine. And that's why it looked so bad was I didn't want to spend an hour, you know, just writing my name. Because even if I took time on it or not, it wasn't going to look good.
So the reason that we initially decided to change it is because I was watching Adam Hammes and Missy Gannon's like re-signing videos and they signed those discs. And I'm like, Chris, you can't sign a disc with your current signature. Like, you are going to look so silly.
Straighten up, boy. We'll get you right and proper. Wow.
Well, I think one of my favorite stories from GBO a couple years ago was they had a bunch of world champions up signing discs, and Paige, at the time, Bjorkis, she had the slowest signature in the world. Everybody's like handing her discs and it's piling up and piling. The disc stack was taller than her at one point because she was like fourth. So there's someone behind her waiting to sign these discs as she's doing this most perfect, like, I hate to stereotype,
beautiful.
But like beautiful, like seventh grade girl signature. And you're just like, come on, let's move this along, Bjerkus. I mean, now she's only got Shoe, so it's much quicker, I'm sure, but
yeah.
Yeah, Shoe is.
No. So. No, please. That joke's a shoe-in for.
I know. We could do that all day.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. So it's going to be, it's, I mean, exactly. So it's not, it's not so much even a, I mean, it's a signature clearly, but it's really just initials.
A monogram. Yeah. It's a monogram almost, yeah.
I mean, and that's got to feel, I mean, that's like, you went to the extreme. That's about as quick and easy as it possibly gets.
It's got his number there.
But it looks nice.
It does.
Yeah, it's clean, it's simple, it's easy.
Mm-hmm. Is it repeatable? Uh-huh. Is it repeatable?
Yes.
Do you have it down
yes.
perfectly?
Okay.
Okay.
The last question about your signature. Have you thought about where 1X would go?
Ooh.
Did you think that far ahead?
Mm.
Like, hey, I'm going to put like 1X, 2X, 3X, because, I mean, someone of your caliber, you kind of have to think about that for the future, just in case, so... Maybe keep an eye on that to think, where am I going to put that 1X next year?
Yeah,
or this,
you know,
year?
It could fall below the PDJ number. It could fall to the right of the D.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there are many options.
Okay.
So
you'll worry about that problem when you get there, right? I mean, that'd be a good problem to have. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, guys, is there anything we didn't ask you that we should have asked you about? What did we leave any stone unturned? Notice I didn't say rock anymore.
There's one thing that drives me nuts, and it's like when people say, Chris doesn't tour. And just so everyone knows, we're going to be on the road 7 months this year, home 5. So we're home less than we are on the road. We're going to most of the events. Please stop saying Chris doesn't tour. It drives me nuts.
I've never heard that. Honestly, I've heard Chris doesn't go to the West Coast, but I've never heard Chris doesn't tour. Because you are one of the guys, kind of almost like a Yuli, that is known just to hit every event, any event, all the events. You know? So, I don't know. I don't understand that either.
Yeah, it's something that I've heard a few times, and it kind of became a running joke with Zach and Calvin. Mm. I can't remember what the instance was, but that subject was brought up, and Calvin goes, oh, yeah, you know, you wouldn't be 10th place in the pro tour standings if you just toured. And I was like, oh yeah, thanks a lot, Calvin, just rub it in that I had a bad year this year.
Yeah, and it's funny to hear that. You know, I look back to the we'll say the last normal year, 2019, 44 sanctioned events, 2018, 48 sanctioned events, 2017, I'm going to guess it's right in that neighborhood, 43 sanctioned events. And also one of my favorite stats that I randomly came across at one point last year or the year before is at that point, you had won exactly half. You were going for a win a particular weekend, and it was exactly half of the total events you had played. I think it was when you were at 135 out of 270 events. You're currently sitting at 150 wins out of 293 events. So you're above pace, above the 51% or 50% winning percentage. Yeah, to say you're not touring is silly. Do you feel like people said that because it was a put down? Or were they saying that out of like a they were let down, like, oh man, he doesn't tour,
let
like
down.
We don't see him enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was more of the letdown.
I don't know. I feel like Chris is generally known as a nice guy, so people don't really say a ton of mean things about him, thankfully. We got two like negative messages out of everything today, and one of them was boo. So it wasn't really like
they were just disappointed they didn't go to their favorite team was probably the disappointment. What was the other one? Was it nasty?
No, I don't even remember. Oh, what did it say? I told you.
It's a shame to see the direction that disc golf is heading.
And we were like, wait, what?
Huh?
That could be taken so many ways.
Exactly.
Like, I hate that all my favorite players I like to watch are getting paid now. That's it's such a shame.
that they can
support their family and not be scraping by.
Oh. Yeah, or that they get to tour around the country and see, you know, the entire beautiful country this year. Oh, I hate that. That is such sellouts. It's all going downhill. Yeah, that's silly.
Back in my day,
so much support for sure. Like, as you should. So much love and support, and we're so, so very grateful.
Well, I don't think there's a better place to end it than with that. We are so happy for you guys. Clearly, the entire disc golf community is very happy for you guys and looking forward to more Chris out on more of the tour in more places during this upcoming season. It's going to be really exciting to watch. And everybody needs to go out and find themselves a Chris Dickerson buzz. Any last words from you guys?
I got five of them.
Any last words from you guys?
Thanks for having us. Yeah, love you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And always remember, when you go to buy a buzz, you can't have enough.
All right. Never enough buzz, says Chris Dickerson.
Yep. Never enough buzz, and meteors don't hit trees. That's what we've learned today.
That's it.
Makes perfect sense. All right. Well, we love you guys. Be safe. Looking forward to the journey. Congratulations on the contract. Congratulations on all of the successes. Couldn't happen to nicer people and more deserving people. So looking forward to 2022 and beyond. And we'll see you guys in a few weeks.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Have a good night. See ya.
The Dickersons.
I mean, if that's not a new show on Disc Golf Network, I don't know what else would
be. The Dickersons. That would be a great show.
I mean,
is that kind of like a Tiny House meets Full House?
Oh, come on. Don't go to the Bob Saget card too soon. Rest in peace, Bob Saget.
Rest in peace, Bob.
Ouch. Ouch, Johnny. Too soon.
Is it, though?
Yeah. Okay. So thank you, first and foremost, of course, Chris and Brittany. During that conversation, and albeit a little while ago, some other crazy news has popped into my inbox, slid into my DMs or just my text messages. One individual who had probably, or a couple of individuals that maybe had a little pull or influence or insight, was none other than the Macbeths, and it looks like Hannah had reached out and said they may be interested in joining us too, which is
what
I don't know if we really have time for them or if that's something our viewers would even like. It wasn't planned, and you know how we like to plan here on our show.
If it's not in the rundown that I, you know, the 10-page rundown that I put together, then I don't know if I can arrange this.
All right. So what I'm going to do is we're going to stall for just a few moments to see if they're still on board. Again, they sent it a while ago. I mean, they do understand how we work here on Smashbox. Nothing's goes short, but if I can, I'm going to try and send over an email.
Yeah, you can send them over that exact thing that you sent Chris. They'll be able to hop on without a problem. Some other news while Terry's kind of arranging that. We saw two really big other things in disc golf this week. The first was Haley King announcing her sponsorship with Innova. I'm really conflicted about this signing. Just the fact that the details are that she signed a one-year agreement.
Mm.
And other than that, nobody knows any other numbers. I don't believe that none of that stuff was public. But I'm confused as to why it's a one-year agreement. I know Innova traditionally has done one-year agreements. But in today's climate, it seems really strange that it wouldn't be at least a two-year or longer when we're seeing a lot of these other sponsorships do multi-year agreements. And as long as Haley's happy with it, that's ultimately what matters. But I was just very perplexed as to the reasoning. I wish, and we reached out to Haley this week, and unfortunately we weren't able to set up a time or communication method, but Terry, do you have any insight as to why the particular agreement was the way it was?
I'm just going to go on some previous overhearings. That very much may have been a mutual
decision
in that It's a new company for Haley.
Correct.
Obviously, she's familiar with Innova and has friends and, you know, people have thrown the Frisbees before. But it's a new company. And so I feel like maybe there's not that pressure. Maybe, you know, of course, she said in the video that she sees this as being the long-term plan and she wants to grow and excel and exceed and all those other things. Of course, you want to say all that and you want all that to be true. However, maybe they also both are hedging their bet just a little and saying, well, let's not lock into anything too heavy, too serious just yet. Mm-hmm. Let's just start with the 1 year contract. And now we'll also take a little step back in time and say a lot of contracts were that way. It wasn't somewhat recently that we saw multiple years. So I wouldn't consider it out of the norm or really that crazy, in my opinion. Clearly, there's more to it than you and I even know, but
I think, yeah, I believe there has to be. And
don't think it's that crazy.
I don't think it's crazy, especially with what you were saying, how, you know, each side feeling the other one out as far as whether the relationship is going to work. You know, I was just a little surprised with our recent signings that we've seen in the FPO and MPO division, but specifically the FPO division with the multi-year agreements. For people that are moving sponsors that have not had a relationship before, that they are, we'll say, jumping in feet first to these sponsorships, and Haley didn't. So either that's one of two things. That's either very mature of Haley and Innova to say, you know, we're going to take it slow and figure it out, or it's very naive of one of the other to not try to lock the other one in for a long-term deal. But ultimately, I think, as long as Haley is happy with her status, there's not much we can really argue or say about it.
Well, and maybe, as someone pointed out in the chat, maybe again, either a manufacturer and or a player is a tad gun shy on a multiple year deal, just knowing that there might be significant challenges if one or the other doesn't want to continue the relationship, depending on how it's crafted in the first place. And I also don't think it's a secret, or maybe it's not a well kept secret, that Innova largely works in 1 year deals.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen Kohling, you've seen Sexton.
No, Sexton just up.
I know, what I'm saying, as multiple year deals.
Okay.
A lot of the other announcements that you see from Innova players are not often multiple year.
Calvin had a 2 year agreement, I believe.
It's not nearly as common. For having the deepest field, the deepest sponsored roster in all of disc golf, I believe most of them are in fact 1 year agreements. So that's something else to factor into this entire conversation for sure. All right. I have officially sent off a message over to Paul and or Hannah. I'm not sure who's around or available. It looks like they're getting themselves set up in this crazy, wild, brand new, exclusive, unplanned appearance.
All right. Do you want to? I think the other thing we can address, we can wait till after the Paul and Hannah thing we address and just quickly talk about Thomas Gilbert.
Yeah, and we'll break that all down in a little while. But it looks like they're ready.
I think
they could probably hear us. One saying yes, the other saying no. There's no better time.
Well, when they're ready, Hannah, give a thumbs up.
Oh, okay. I guess
Hannah's walking away.
So not quite ready.
Not quite ready yet.
As you were just saying, we were talking about Thomas. Another piece of conversation that we can save a little bit later is today, largely, there was a discussion that took place with regard to seeing less Masters divisions offered at some of our largest scale event, one of them being the DDO, which just had the registration open today. That's a conversation piece that we can also get into just a little bit later, but certainly one that's out there as well. And I've got a lot of mixed emotions and reactions. And I know we had Jay Ray and Steve Rico to kind of have that conversation a few months ago. And I don't know. I mean, clearly we didn't solve any of the world's problems with that conversation, but it's a conversation that needs to continue to happen and see where we're going to go with it. So that was out there on the interwebs and very much a conversation taking place today. Should we have a Johnny V tour?
Me touring the country?
No, you headlining the Advanced Masters or Pro Masters tour.
I wouldn't headline either of those tours at this point.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm a decent...
Just put you on the feature card every single beginning of every single event. It's Johnny V and three others, and that's how we market it.
That could get at least six people to watch. And there's six people that are just desperate for disc golf.
That's possible. Yeah, so that's one of the conversation pieces. And as you just mentioned, in seeing Haley jump on last night and lock into her sponsorship, two other big names that are yet to announce or come out with anything public that we're probably waiting on would be Katrina Allen and Nico LaCastro. I feel like those are two of the largest names out there that have not come forth with any other official sponsor announcement, and hopefully that will change here in the I would assume in the next couple of weeks or less.
Yeah, I mean if I had my way we'd have it. You know, Kat would announce next Tuesday. You know, yeah. Just every Tuesday we get a great announcement, and we can go from there. Yeah, I'm curious. I'm really curious as to see where both of them sign, but really, especially Nico.
Yeah,
just because we've seen him go through, you know, a couple different manufacturer sponsors, and whether he's going to sign on with another one or if he's going to go open bag, maybe do Gateway like he did kind of growing up. So.
All right. Well, it looks like we just have Paul. I don't know if we're going to have Hannah or if she's going to join in a little while or not, but maybe she just got Paul all set up. She is the brains behind the operation, I've heard, as they're setting up Gamer
Studio. That's really been the theme the last 2 weeks.
All these women are running the world. We know this. Well, we're going to welcome to the show none other than five-time world champ Paul McBeth. And Paul, how you doing? Thanks for joining.
Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I feel like it's been a long time, so.
It has. Your ears might have been ringing. We were talking to your new teammate, Chris Dickerson, and well, give us your perspective. How did that relationship start, and were you one of the main people that kicked that off?
Influenced that?
excuse me, sorry. I did not have much to do with that, to be honest. I don't know what all the details behind the scene are and all that stuff with Chris, but I was up there for his first visit to Discraft's headquarters and stuff like that, so that was really cool to help him out and kind of just share some thoughts about the company and you know, what to expect and kind of just, hey, here's Discraft, here's the facility, here's, you know, so-and-so and things like that. And to be honest, he didn't meet everyone the first time there because he wasn't signed to a contract or anything like that. So it was still trying to keep it secret. Even with Discraft employees, you know, a lot of them are still disc golf fans. So it's hard to keep a secret like that. So he didn't get a chance to meet everyone, but I'm sure next time he's up there, he'll get a chance to meet everyone and kind of feel a little bit more a part of that family. And I know that term gets used a lot in disc golf, especially with the companies, but Discraft is literally family. Like, so many of them are brothers, sisters, cousins, aunts, uncles. So it's really cool.
Now, I asked him, I said, you know, the number one player in the world is there, you know, and everything that you've done and accomplished, you made such big waves moving there. Is there any weird feelings or animosity or jealousy or anything that you feel like could come about? And the follow-up to that is also, why would you invite other really good players to come be on your team?
Well, I mean, if we all throw the same plastic and we're all, you know, we all have the same options for disc, then we're really going to find out who the best players in the world are, right?
So okay.
I think that's a little fun competition as well as being teammates. You know, we get to compete against each other on the course, and we get to compete off the course as well as to, hey, whose signature disc is selling more? Whose this is doing better? So, I mean, we're athletes at the end of the day, so we love competition, or else we wouldn't be doing this. But it is really cool having Chris be a part of the team now, and you know, I know there's things that I can help him with as far as the disc, and there's things he's going to teach me, and he's probably going to be like, hey, have you ever tried this disc? And I'll probably say no to some of them because I haven't tried every disc in Discraft's lineup yet. But, you know, I think it's just fun. And you know, there is a lot of disc manufacturers out there nowadays, but there are the leaders, you know, a lot of the ones that people know. So a lot of the top players will end up on the same team eventually. I mean, even Rick and I were on the same team at one point, too.
Yeah, and that brings up another question. Last week when we had Rick on the show and, of course, talking about his contract and everything else, he was blunt, and he said Discraft was on the table and a consideration to join that team. And I don't know, just speak to that. What's your takeaway on that, and what were the conversations like from your perspective?
Yeah, so Bob Giulio, the team manager for Discraft, he reached out to me and said, hey, Ricky's manager, Ari, has reached out to us, and he's thinking about making a switch. He's like, I'd have a guilty conscience if I didn't talk to you first about this and kind of just let you know, like, as a business, it'd be dumb of us not to see what can happen. And I told him, like, I don't care. Like, go ahead, you know, talk to him and see. And almost the same thing I just said, you know, on the last question, like, I'd love to compete, throw in the same things and see who's better, you know, head to head. So, obviously, you know, the Discraft didn't either offer what they were looking for, or they had better offers on the table. And he ended up going Dynamic Disc, but yeah, I mean, it's Discraft's call at the end of the day. So, I didn't feel one way or the other about it.
Are there any secrets at Discraft? I mean, because to me, that just that whole conversation, to some, sounds crazy. Mm-hmm. Like that it would even happen, that there would be a consideration of two of these rivals, you know, that have had some of the most, you know, epic battles ever, that you guys would potentially be teammates. So I guess it begs the question, are there any secrets at that place? I mean, is everybody open about just about everything?
I mean, like, contracts still are secret. Like, I don't know what Paige makes. I don't know what Chris makes. I don't know what Brody makes, especially on the elite level. Mm-hmm. Usually when you get a little bit lower, there is, like, kind of, hey, this is what this team gets, and then you might get this one thing because it fits you better, or you might get the, you know, more discs because, you know, you kind of sell them or whatever. So those things, I think, are a little bit more under wraps, but that might not be my position. But as far as a company, Discraft's very open, you know, with a lot of things, you know, and that's what I love about being there is they are so open and they allow me to put my hands in multiple things that they have going on over there. So I think that's one of the most fun parts as well, because I do love, you know, designing discs with them and having the drawings here and be like, hey, what if we change this angle of the nose or put this kind of bead on this disc and tweak things around. I love having my hands in that as well as potential plastic combinations and things like that as well.
Are we going to be seeing any additional discs to the Paul McBeth line? I mean, you have a few right now, so.
Yeah, I have five. I have five in my line right now, but there'll definitely be more. I don't have a timeline on anything. You know, we just added Chris. Adam Hammes is definitely developing into a great player. You know, you got Yuli, you got Paige, you got Missy, you got, you know, all these players. So at the end of the day, I'm just one of them. So they have some other players to make happy. So my time will come. So with that disc, whenever it happens, or multiple discs. So. I would love for it to be next month, but
you're realistic, which is great.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, as I just thought of how I asked you about the secrets, I'm calling out Bob Giulio, who I know frequently watches live. So, Bob, mm-hmm. I'm calling you a liar. A couple weeks ago, when we had a brief chat, Bob and I did, I said, any big changes, anything else coming down the pipe? And, you know, I had heard rumors of Chris and whatnot. And Bob, no, nothing else going on here. So, Bob, I might be media, but don't lie to me, bro. I'm on to you. I'm on to you.
NDAs, man. He can't.
Yeah. So this kind of goes hand in hand with a few years ago, you wanted your contract to be public. Discraft said, yeah, we're good with that as well. And now we've seen some details about a handful of other contracts, but still, for the most part, we don't. Has it made the change you wanted it to yet? Has it been fully realized or impacted? Because we're still not getting many details about many contracts.
Well, I mean, you got to start somewhere. So it's definitely, I mean, we have what, 4 total public. I mean, even Chris's, you know, is kind of, he let out a figure of numbers. So it's definitely gotten a lot of eyes on the sport. I feel like, you know, with my deal, when I signed the 10 years and then Ricky's with his 4-year, like there's news outlets that would probably not talk about disc golf for other reasons than just the money side. You know, he just did a Bitcoin interview as well. So it's definitely making a splash for the sport. And I think as these contracts start to grow like that, like it will be harder to be sponsored by disc manufacturers, but that kind of opens the door for a lot of other outlets as well. But I think it's kind of just creating that value for the player and kind of putting the ball a little bit more in their court to show that we have a value. But still, each player is going to have to figure out how they bring that value to a company, because, you know, these sponsors are paying players not only for their ability on the course, but also to move their product, because at the end of the day, they're a business. And in order to stay in business, you got to sell your product. So, so I think that's kind of where it's at. And I think it's definitely helped the sport, because if you look at when I signed that first deal with Discraft, I think if I didn't make those numbers public, would we be seeing Ricky now at DD after his stint at Innova, you know, and then leaving early to Dynamic Disc, because, you know, he saw his value as worth more than what he was getting at Innova, clearly. So that's, I don't know. I think it is doing great for the sport right now.
Would it be fair to say that you think some manufacturers are more generous than others? Or does it come down to just dollars and cents and, like, shrewd business tactics? Like, why are we seeing some really big contracts at a few companies, but not necessarily at the others? Is that just their books and that's their business?
Yes, it is technically. Like, there's no right for us to have our contracts public because they are just endorsement deals. But I think as the players, it does help a lot of people find and kind of determine what their value is, to where they can approach these sponsors, and not just in disc golf too, but like outside disc golf and other outlets of sponsorship and endorsement deals. So, I guess it's just how comfortable, you know, a manufacturer is with letting those numbers out. But hopefully, I don't know. It's hard to answer that question, but, some people just don't want to share those numbers, and that's fine.
Sure. I it just feels like, you know, we were just talking right before you came on that Haley had locked into, for instance, a 1-year deal, and we're seeing multiple year deals. You know, some were arguing that Rick feels like he might be in a better position because it's not as long as your contract. However, you know, it's a little bit shorter. Therefore, he can, you know, maybe renegotiate quicker than, you know, what you might be able to do, even though I'm sure if you're doing big things, you'll be able to as well. But, you know, multiple year. But then we see other players like a Chris Dickerson, who we just had, who was in, just signed an extension, but then is now leaving that early. And Nico LaCastro, same idea. Are these contracts not strong enough? Are the players looking for too much, or the manufacturer? Like, what's kind of your take? I mean, there's a lot there, but how should the public be perceiving those?
Yeah, I mean, I think it can go both ways. It can be where a player and a manufacturer agree and say, yeah, you know, this might not be working out the way that we both intended, and, you know, maybe you should go a different route and we'll go a different route. It could be as easy as that, or it could be extremely hard, to where you got legal issues going on, because I hate using people for these examples, but, mm-hmm. you know, we just had Rick sign this big deal and he left early. Mm-hmm. And, you know, someone like Ricky, the face of Innova at the time, like, that's a big loss for Innova. You know, it could be millions of dollars that they're losing in those 2 years. And that's a big deal for a company. Mm-hmm. So, you know, does that turn into issues outside of disc golf, you know, legally, because you're leaving a contract, you're breaking a contract? Or it could be as simple as, hey, you know, let's just walk away. You're not really happy here. You can get something so much more over here. we're okay with that. You know, but we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. But when you start talking millions of dollars, it could become issues. So that's kind of where our sport is right now, is we're kind of walking on eggshells right now, because it used to be, you know, almost probably less than 5 years ago, when it was just a handshake deal, or some of these players are not playing for actually, they don't even have contracts. I think we had that with Paige not that long ago. But now you got your name on paperwork and you're mm-hmm. legally binding to something. So I don't know. It's a scary thought if people really want to do some stuff.
Yeah. And I kind of had this conversation with somebody about a manufacturer player relationship. And someone was like, well, if the player's not happy, why would the manufacturer want them? And I kind of had to explain, well, there are, if you sign someone to a multi-year agreement, assuming millions of dollars is going to be exchanging hands between people buying your plastic, you may be ramping up your company. You might be, buying another molding machine. You might be getting another HR person. Now, and if a player leaves that contract and you're not expecting it, suddenly you are left in the lurch with, sure. These players hold a lot of weight. And I can see it obviously both ways, where, like you said, sometimes they're just, yeah, cool, that's right. You're not happy, we're not happy, let's agree to not be happy apart.
And I think one really hard part with this too is if someone's leaving early, and so like if they're signed to $100,000 and another company's offering $1 million, but they still have two more years with this $100,000 company, why is that company that already has them signed, why are they going to offer them more when they're already bound to a contract? So it's kind of like puts that company in a hard spot, because, hey, you already signed this, you're already here. Mm-hmm. Why do we have to offer you more? You already signed mm-hmm. that. So it does get difficult. And, you know, as a player, I would hope anyone could leave at any time just to have that free will. But now, you know, we have contracts and it's a little bit more difficult. So you never know what can happen. And hopefully a lot of these players have representation and they can have a lawyer look at this, or if anything is wrong, they can get out of it, you know, without any issues going on. Because I think we had 3 or 4 or 5 players leave contracts early this year. And I haven't heard of that really much in the past.
No, well, I mean, there weren't really many contracts to be left early. And I would say, speaking of leaving things early, it was just last week that it was announced that you and Foundation Disc Golf are parting mm-hmm. ways. You were one of the founders, if I remember correctly, of the organization, and now you are stepping back from that, or stepping away from that. Is there there's been a lot of speculation as to why and this and that. Do you want to give us kind of a general I've read posts and whatnot, but this is maybe a different crowd.
Yeah, no, it's funny because it seems like it's been so long ago. Yeah, I mean, I'm so busy with getting ready for the year right now. The Paul McBeth Foundation has been incredible. We actually have we're actually all coming together right now this weekend to do some meetings and stuff and just prepare for this year. And some other things going on. Like, I was just up in Michigan last week. I'm gonna go get to some warmer weather to go get out and throw some more. And with how Foundation's taken off in the last year, especially on the social media, the podcast, YouTube, all that stuff, it's just, I guess the easiest way to say it is we didn't take money out of the company. Every dollar we made as owners, we put right back into the company. So that way you have to be an active owner. You have to work, you know, you can't just sit back and collect because there's nothing to collect. So, we're just putting it back into the company, and right now I don't have that time to commit the way that they are, you know, Hunter and Brody and all the other guys. I don't have that amount of time to commit, so I can't be an active owner like that. And unfortunately, I just felt like I was holding them back and not doing my part, and it was just that time for me to step away from that. And we talked about maybe in the future I'll be able to come back and, you know, put my focus into Foundation Disc Golf, and I might be paying a lot more to get back into it. But right now, you know, that's the position I'm in, and you know, Hunter and Brody are still really good friends. So, you know, I wish nothing but the best, and I'm sure I'll be in a couple of videos throughout the season and whatnot, but I'm only here like one more week before I get really ready for the season. So that kind of sucks. I won't be won't be able to make any of their stuff right now, but yeah, it's sad to start that and do it, but it's also so proud to be able to see where it's at now, from literally starting in a basement.
Yeah, and not to be confused, because when I originally read the snippet or the post or the headline or whatever it was, I very much read it as Paul McBeth leaving the foundation, as in your own foundation. I'm like, this just got weird. But clearly, you are not leaving or stepping away from the Paul McBeth Foundation. In fact, just the opposite of that. And as you just said, that's where we're seeing course developments, new projects continually come up. But talk to us about, you know, that experience and then what this means for you and your future and the successes you guys have been having there at the Paul McBeth Foundation.
Yeah, the Paul McBeth Foundation. It's been incredible. The support that we've gotten from, you know, people, companies, volunteers, and the communities that we've gone to has just been, it's been outstanding to see. From Mexico early in the year, I mean, we went May. May was the first project. I guess I should break it down. So Mexico had never heard of disc golf, like that area. They'd never heard of it, never saw it or anything. So it was their first time ever seeing disc golf. And we have multiple PDGA members down there now that are, you know, truly Mexicans, you know, not some expats that have come down there, moved down there, but like truly the ones that we introduced to at that time. They went across the country and played a tournament in Monterrey, Mexico. Like they were already playing tournaments within their first 6 months of discovering disc golf. And then the other one was Guatemala, just outside of Antigua. And I didn't realize Guatemala was the most beautiful country ever. That place was incredible. Like just watching volcanoes go off like 24 hours a day. Like you just see lava spewing out the top of this thing. And it's a golf course that they built a disc golf course on 9 holes, and they got another 9 potentially. But it's right next to this indigenous Mayan village. So like straight out of history books, like these people just look like Mayans that you see in history books and stuff when you're in school. And it's just incredible to see them just take up disc golf. Because again, it's like this one was Americans that were there that brought disc golf to the area. And then we were able to help with the baskets and discs and they were able to schedule a lot of clinics, and just, we introduced a lot of people there in Guatemala to disc golf. And then Colombia, which had a, they had a really big, I think, ultimate frisbee freestyle scene. And when COVID hit, they kind of, that kind of went away. So they got into disc golf and they started their own club, but they just didn't have the funding for baskets. So we were able to help with that part of it and fund them with the money because they had to build the baskets there. So we were able to fund them with that and discs as well. And they had a club already there that knew how to throw discs and frisbees. So they really took to it really quick. They've been running like their own small leagues and tournaments. And when we were there, we were able to introduce it, not as many people as we did in Guatemala, but we were able to teach the people that already knew disc golf how to teach others. So that was a really big thing. And we met with some government officials there, the mayor. So we met with like the right hand man to the mayor, and he looked like a Colombian Drew Gibson. I'm sure if you look on social media, you'll see that picture.
Yeah.
But really, really incredible people there, and we were able to visit this property and help them. We gave them some insight on how to design that course, and then this official said, like, yeah, we're going to try to get that land over there as well to make this a bigger property. And the property looks so much like the Grand Canyon in Brooksville, Florida.
Okay,
very similar. So you can kind of get an idea of what that land looks like. But so they said, yeah, we're going to work on it starting tomorrow to get that land and try to bring it for disc golf, because we really want to use disc golf to help the community here and kind of just take them out of turmoil of you know, you've probably seen what's happened in Colombia in the past, and this area was really affected by that. So they want to try to use disc golf to bridge that gap and bring the community together and kind of just, you know, take some of that away. And it's just incredible to hear the stories that that they're going to, you know, that have happened in these areas, or what disc golf can potentially bring to them, and just the promise that they see and the hope out of disc golf. So, I hope I can go back and visit some more.
Yeah, and then the follow up to all of that is, what's next? I mean, what is your queue or the wait list or the people submitting and applying? Like, what does that look like right now? And have you announced any new wave of recipients?
Well, we're having that meeting this weekend to finalize it a little bit more. So I maybe if you have me on this time next week, I'll have some more answers to that question. But definitely, when we first announced last year, early in the year, we had hundreds and hundreds of emails of mm-hmm. just like, hey, we'd love this, but you do have to filter through them, because just because you don't have a course within 5 minutes doesn't make you qualified.
underserved, you know,
yeah. So, you know, we definitely want to find another city in the States. It's a little bit more difficult in the States to get it done than it is international right now. But yeah, we definitely have some projects in mind, but we're going to have to look through it a little bit more. And the foundation has such a solid team behind it that they're able to go through these and get in touch with, the ones that kind of stand out a little bit more, the venue, shouldn't say venues, but the properties that stand out a little bit more, so we can make sure they're going to be sustainable. That's the biggest thing. We don't just want to put baskets and discs in somewhere that they're just going to sit and get grown mm-hmm. over. We want them to actually be used and utilized. So that's the big goal.
Yeah, if I know people in either the Twin Cities or Charlotte area saying, hey, I need a course, you know, I actually have to drive 6 minutes to get to mine, you guys are automatically disqualified.
To them, right? That is underserved.
I know, what I mean.
I don't have one within 15 minutes of my house, so this is a real underserved area.
I will say, if you're from the Twin Cities, you can definitely help. So
yeah.
You can still help out.
Speak to that of your partnerships, your collaborations. How are people helping you? I mean, I'm doing my part. I keep buying Double G jerky that, of course, supports you.
Yep.
I got to get in where I fit in. But what are some of your collaborations and partnerships where people can definitely intentionally or unintentionally help?
Yeah, the notable ones, I'll just go in order from the projects. Like Dynamic Disc was a big supporter. They got their baskets in at Mexico. They got 9 in to start. And then we, you know, it was our first project. So we're like, let's see if this is sustainable, if it's going to work. And it absolutely blew up. And I went down there not that long ago and designed the back 9 for them. So they're going to have 9 more baskets. They're going to have a full 18. So wow. When people go down there to the Cabo or La Paz area, they'll have a full 18-hole course. Guatemala, that was Discraft. They donated baskets. They donated a bunch of discs. I don't know if they're – oh, yeah, Ledgestone was Colombia. Mm-hmm. Ledgestone, so they were a big partner. Grip jumped on at the end. U-Disc was a big help with the match. 10,000 to this, and they would match it up to 10,000, and we hit that number. So thanks to everyone that hopped in on that. And then I know there's gonna be a few I left out, but you mentioned Double G Craft Jerky. A good chunk of that goes directly to the Paul McBeth Foundation when you buy one of the Paul McBeth signature bags. I don't see a dime of that goes straight to the foundation. I'm trying not to mix them up, because I know there's a lot already lined up for next year as well.
Are you leaving out yourself? You donated your winnings. All of your winnings this past year went to the foundation, the Paul McBeth Foundation.
$89,203 or something like that.
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah, about that, yeah. And are you planning on repeating that this year? Is that going to be a regular or...
that's awkward.
Smashbox exclusive. No, I'm gonna talk to him this week and see if that's the right move again. Okay. Hopefully I can hit 100,000 this year in earnings. But yeah, I'm gonna talk to him this winter or this weekend and double check and see if that's what I should do again. But I mean, I would say yes right away, but
well, we'll find out more in the next few weeks. Then.
Yeah, and yeah, understandably, definitely. Your heart may be right there, but with regard to everything that's going on in terms of just overall, not just tax implications, but just overall finances, funds and everything at the foundation, there's probably advantages to maybe 1 year versus not, and so on and so forth. So, yeah. And to be fair, clearly you're doing amazing things and you're going way above and beyond. I don't know if it should just be assumed or expected that every year you're putting your check there. So I know that can be kind of an awkward.
And honestly, I don't even know how it works as far as tax. I'm still talking to my CPA about that. Like, is it all a tax write-off? Is it better if I just do half and put half into tax? I'm not sure yet.
Sure.
So I need to figure that out with him too, because he might just say, yeah, do half and the other half will go here. So I'm not sure. I still got to figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, Harrison's got to eat. I mean, you're going to have to keep a little of that money. is there anything that's wild or crazy or out of the ordinary, whether it's the foundation or yourself as a player and a promoter, anything that 2022 is like might raise someone's eyebrow that you think is coming? Or seem
Page's documentary.
Yep, yeah, okay.
Pretty wild.
Okay.
Some of the behind the scenes stuff with that, especially with Carly Lloyd is doing the voiceovers and stuff for that.
Yes, I believe even today as we speak, I think she was flying to Philly today to meet up with her.
She put some clips on her Instagram story with her with Carly Lloyd behind the mic. So that's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that absolutely is. And then also in her name, Charlie Mead, I believe, had put together the nomination for Paige to become is it like an athlete of the year or sportswoman of the year?
Is it the World Games?
World
one?
Games athlete.
Oh
yeah, I feel like I should have that at the tip of my tongue. But
was that today or yesterday?
I think it opened yesterday, to speak. So that's something else that's pretty cool to see, for sure. Vote daily for athlete. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything wild and crazy right now, just besides a really busy, busy winter. I do want to go to Europe for 6 weeks, but we'll see how that's going. Like, that's one of my really big goals. I want to go over there, hopefully do a foundation trip as well, and maybe do a course install or just whatever I can with the foundation somewhere over there in Europe. I don't have any place picked out or anything like that, but definitely want to do that. But I just want to play better next year.
what do you? I mean, I saw you, putting in the basement, and you got the air mattress behind it. I mean, I don't know if that's a lack of confidence or just trying not to neck up a wall, but no, seriously,
it's
though.
Cut-throughs only.
Okay, what were you missing last year, and then how are you going to fix it for this year?
At times it was definitely confidence. There's times where it was confidence, but I think mainly just consistency. Just didn't get the same amount of reps that I have in previous years and winters. So definitely want to get the consistency down, and that's really it. You know, if I feel like, but if I feel like I can make the putt, then I have all the confidence in the world that I'm gonna play well. Because that's the biggest thing. If I feel like I can make the putt from anywhere, then I don't care where I'm throwing the disc. I'm gonna go out there and play well. So that the putting confidence leads to so much in my game, because it allows me to take a lot of pressure off the drives and stuff like that. And when you have high pressure on the drives, that's when you usually shank it. You either pull it or let it go early or turf it for some people. But when you can just relax and throw the disc and know you're going to make it from anywhere, that's a big thing for me. So
we saw you play with your form. I mean, I saw a couple of different mechanics for you in your putt. Where are you at? How much does it look like a putt from 2 years ago versus, one you tried this year?
Well, it definitely doesn't have the Anheuser, I can tell you that. That was just trying to get – I think it's mainly getting the consistency and trying to get my body to line up properly and just get a consistent release. The biggest thing is the release for me is making sure it's consistent. shifting the weight and the body motions, that's going to change putt to putt. You know, whether you're on a side hill, you got a log between your legs or whatever, branches, but having the release is the biggest part. So hopefully I can get that dialed down and extremely consistent before the season starts. And that'll change everything. You know, that slight little hyzer at the nose up a little bit, and then just being able to slightly adjust it depending on the wind. So, yeah, it's just repetitions mainly. And unfortunately, you know, selling out of a foundation does give me a lot more time to do that. So,
okay. So, that's what I was going to say is have you,
what is a lot?
Yeah. Honestly. You just talked about how busy you are with the Paul McBeth Foundation. Yeah. Are you dedicating more reps this winter?
Yeah. It's like, as soon as I wake up, I'll go down, it's in the basement. So I'll go down there and putt, probably about anywhere between 30 minutes to an hour, and then do a workout and then eat and do whatever errands I have to run. And then come back and putt a bit more and then do some more errands, whatever I have to do. And then like after this, as long as Hannah's not asleep yet, I'll go down and putt some more. so not a lot of throwing, but that's why we're going to go to warmer weather here after the weekend and get the throwing reps in. So,
Okay, let me ask this question first, then we'll get to where you're going. You know, this year you're listed with 24 sanctioned events, $88,903 for the winnings. That included 5 wins. How do you rate or rank your season? How satisfied are you with it, and how do you rank your season and performance?
I always want to use the word consistent in my performance, but I think that's what it definitely lacked there. There were a lot more finishes outside the top 3 that I'd like.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was to rank it out of all 15 of my or 14 of my professional careers, it's probably around 7 or 8 in there somewhere. So
room for improvement kind of
year for me. Yeah, a lot of room for improvement, but I did show up at the majors. I mean, those mm-hmm. are the big ones for me. That I was one shot away from getting the 6-1 there. So I would have had 2 majors, both majors, the 2 biggest of the year. So that definitely would have bumped the year up to probably about a 3 or 4.
So, yeah,
honestly, probably 2 or 3. I mean, getting US and Worlds in the same year.
Yeah, and I mean, I know at one point later in the year we made the joke that like you averaged 1.5, you know, for in terms of the majors, and you know, an epic proportion with the playoff in itself. Quick side note and tidbit to that: in releasing some of the mixed doubles footage, I had a conversation with Rob Bolin from over there at Utah, and he said that originally, when hole 18 was designed at the fort, he wanted it shorter, and it was going to be essentially a par 3. And he's like, thank God I got overruled, and then it later went on to, you know, give us 2 of the most, you know, historic finishes. And there's, you know, a lot of woulda, coulda, shouldas. But the fact that, you know, originally he thought of that as just basically a straight ahead par 3 shot, as opposed to having the bend that it did. Now, maybe that's what you wish it would have been now, but just kind of a crazy side note to think, you know, what that venue set up for us.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I would change is if that wasn't a mandatory and there was like a group of trees there to where the hyzer isn't even an option. I think that'd be the only thing that could make that hole any better. As far as a viewing point, I mean, they had the bleachers on the left side. They had the setup, you know, where the awards is going to be right there behind the basket to the right. And if that could have been a row of trees and OB over there, I think that's the only thing that would have made that hole better. I mean, that's probably the best hole on that course.
Wow.
As far as design.
Okay. And it's funny because it gave us what it did, but it wasn't one of my favorites, and so that's interesting that you liked it that much. Are the teams set? like, come, everyone's thinking like, oh, we're still waiting on so-and-so and maybe such-and-such and blah, blah, blah. Are these teams finally set? Or is there any announcements that, that you're anticipating yet that are crazy
that,
or
that
still out there?
Nobody knows?
Yeah, or that nobody knows things. I mean, a lot of people didn't see Chris Dickerson coming.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's hard when they still have years left on their contract. I think those are the last people to really announce, too. You know, Rick, Chris, Haley, and then what is it, Nico and Kat are still left?
Yeah, we you know,
so
we don't.
Nico still had a year left on his, and I don't know what Kat's was. I mean, it's all the people that still had years left on their contracts.
Well, you have the inside scoop, so it's not even fair to ask if you know or where they're going or what they're doing, but you know things.
I've heard things.
what is that? I mean, whether it's a Chris Dickerson that talks to you or any other players thinking about other teams, like how much do people either reach out, ask for advice or don't, or you know, do you get involved with anyone else's conversations? Do people come to you? And
they clearly know cars. I mean, we heard all about the Corolla conversation you had with the Dickersons about what's best for towing. Yeah. And
yeah, but do people come to you for advice in some of these situations, whether it's Discraft or otherwise?
Yeah, definitely. They do, and I like to tell them all the same. I think I've told Discraft this. I'm always player first. So, you know, if like Chris was like, hey, I'm stuck between Innova or, Discraft, like, what do you think? And it's always like, hey, it's what fits you best. You know, it's what your needs are. And you notice, you know, with his contract, he said a lot of it's for his family and I need to look out for my family and this and that, to where some people don't have that, to where this sponsor might be a better opportunity for them. You know, if Discraft is offering them an RV and this and that, and they're like, you know, I like my van, I like this and that, you know. So I've always been player first with a lot of these. So I do get asked a lot for tips. Harrison, he was dreaming, walked right into that door. But yeah, it's.
don't worry, Hannah's there.
Hi, Hannah.
Yeah. he was asleep there and he just started dreaming. But yeah, so a lot of players do reach out, and I think I forgot the second part of that question. Sorry.
If you know, I was talking about you know, if you're giving advice and how many people are reaching out to you, and you answered that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Oh yeah. The thing I was going to add is, I mean, I'm going into my 15th year as a professional. So I feel like I've been there, seen a lot, failed, succeeded in a lot of things. So I can kind of give that advice to a lot of these players and things like that. So, you know, I welcome anyone that reaches out to me and asks questions, cause I am open about it, because, you know, it is tough, you know, if especially if you're your own representation, it's really hard. So I do encourage a lot of players to try to find representation, because it makes it so much easier to have someone else speaking for you and representing you, because, I mean, they can make you sound like the number one player in the world, even if you aren't. But that's their job, is to sell you. So,
We've seen, I'll go down that route then, we've seen player management groups and representation, LWS or Schaefer Sports specifically, also the disc golf management group, and we've seen some others in the past, some that you've been involved with. Where are you personally aligned with any kind of management? Do you have any representation?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I don't know if that's going to be public yet or not. I'll find out here soon and see what the deal is on that. But yeah, as far as, you know, you brought up what I used to have, DGI, Disc Golf Initiative. So they were my original agent. When I first switched over to Discraft, they kind of went and talked with Innova, talked with Discraft. I think those were the only two. And kind of did that negotiating, and I learned a lot from them, because I wanted to know the ins and outs of contracts, because I'm that stuff, you know, is interesting to me, because it kind of helps me know what my value is and how I can help a company and how I can also maximize my sponsorship deal, and just kind of the ins and outs, and that's how we were able to come up with the 4 years, $1 million original deal, and finding out how to make Discraft happy and how to make myself happy and meet in the middle while maximizing the contract at the same time. So Sam Hassel was negotiating that all, doing all the talking. I was never in a meeting with either of them until it was my time to tell Innova that, all right, I'm going a different direction. That was the first time I had a meeting with them about it was when I was leaving. So it made it so much easier on me. I could just focus on playing. And that was the year I was able to win USDGC, my final year, because I was just focused on playing and let him do all that talking. And then that kind of went under after that. They had some internal issues go on, but it is a really hard thing to find someone that you trust to talk about you and look out for the best, you know, your best interests. So it is a hard thing because you do have to trust them and hope they're going to do the best. But yeah, if that does for my representation go public, I'm sure, you know, we'll talk about it the next time I'm on here.
I
do have.
Well, like I said, I was saying to Ricky and Ari and having that kind of conversation, because obviously she's acting as the tour manager and then he's going to have, you know, ultimately representation for sponsors. Seems like sponsors largely that are outside of disc golf, which I feel like is mm-hmm. is kind of this interesting caveat that a few of these relationships have been. It's like, I have a sponsor, but I want you to go get sponsors that aren't disc golf related and, you know, and act on that behalf. I think we're just kind of wading through, like, what's the right mechanism. But you bring up a great point about trust. These people need to know you intimately and work in your best interest, but there's probably still this awkwardness of there's a lot of people that just want to be fanboys and get to know you better and will say or do anything to feel like, hey, maybe we can, you know, work out a deal or represent you. And I worry that that's a challenge that we have in all of disc golf right now.
No, yeah, it's definitely difficult. I mean, in every sport, you know, you hear all these horror stories of how people got taken advantage of. They let their best friend be their manager or their agent, and they were taking $5,000 a month and putting into their So, I mean, there's horror stories. You could look at any which direction and find it. So hopefully that doesn't happen in disc golf, you know, but disc golf's going to be around for a long time. So I'm sure someone's lifetime we'll have our own disc golf horror story. So, but yeah, it is difficult. But, you know, I think it's something that's going to be needed, especially, you know, how we were talking about these contracts and things like that. It's going to be big. Like, I had a manager this year. When I signed my renegotiated deal with Discraft, like, first thing was like, all right, we're going to put this money here. We're going to make sure you have this. We're going to make sure you have that. And, you know, finding the correct CPA, the correct financial advisor, the correct investments and all this stuff. And then, like, my favorite thing was they're like, all right, you're going to take this little amount here and that's going to be what you live off of. Like, that's going to be your personal. The rest is going to go into this, taxes, blah, blah, blah. Scariest part's taxes. That's what I hate dealing with. I'll put all my money over there if I have to for now, just to be safe, not get in trouble. But yeah, it's great having someone working for you that can get all those things lined up and make sure that you're meeting your deadlines and you're meeting all this, because that, I mean, that could be so overwhelming that you just push it to the side 1 month and then all of a sudden you're behind so far. So, able to answer emails and such is one of the hardest things.
Yeah. And then Pete Rose shows up at your door and next thing you know, you have to have a talk with him and his agency or something. I don't know.
So this year we saw the Disc Golf Pro Tour bring in, some, especially for the tour finale, some outside sponsorship. I think we saw LL Bean, Johnsonville. There was one more big, Guarantee Rate. So those are like the three big ones. Do you see 2022 being any different for the players? Because we saw them sponsor the tour, but still we have not really seen a huge outside sponsor coming for some players, have we?
If Johnsonville sponsors you, we're talking brats, right? We're going to have a podcast.
I'm driving
weekly
up the road to Johnsonville.
We're going
to
be talking brats. Do you
see outside sponsorship coming soon for players? Or maybe you have an announcement.
Talking brats.
No, I don't, unfortunately. I don't have an announcement.
It would have been such a good setup, Johnny.
I tried.
I mean, I definitely think they will. I think the reason the tour is getting these sponsorships right now is because they have the right people in the right places. You know, Sean Jack is really good at what he does, and he's mm-hmm. out there, I'm sure, reaching out to these companies and being like, hey, this is the tour that I have. Look at what we have here. These are the athletes that are competing in it. You should mm-hmm. be the face of this tour right now, or our tour championship, you know, with Guaranteed Rate, Johnsonville, and L.L. Bean. So, you know, that's only going to help us as players down the road, because they're going to want to be at more than just one event. They're going to see, you know, oh, they'll look at probably the social medias and stuff like that. Pro Tour has X amount, 50, I'm just going to throw a number out, 50,000, but this player has 150,000. Like, mm-hmm. we want to be in front of three times the amount of people if we sponsor that player. And you know, maybe they're dumping $10,000 to $50,000 in that tournament. If they're dumping that into a player, like, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's only going to help the players. I don't know if anyone's in contact with anything, but I mean, what is that? LWS, you were just saying?
That's the accounting side. And then I think Schaefer Sports is also then his company that's working agency. On the player agency. Mm-hmm. You know, Paige, Ricky, Missy, I think all on board. Yes.
So, I mean, that was once an outside the sport company. So,
mm-hmm. Now, I was just going to follow up outside the sport. You showed up at, I guess specifically, USDGC this year, sporting some new threads. Brittany talked about doing some of the product shoot for that. Well, where does that stand? And do you have any updates one way or another? Is that partnership continuing? Is that something you're still exploring? Are you negotiating? Or where does that stand? Who? Break it down for everybody.
Well, we're still exploring, definitely. Yeah, so McCain and I, we had some talks this winter, and they sent me an offer, and we kind of sent a counter offer, and it looked like it was working out. And I don't know if the demand from disc golf was too high, but they said, like, pretty much we won't be able to meet the demand. So we're going to have to step back from this because we don't have the infrastructure to keep up, essentially, to make the product. And I don't know what's going on. You know, they're in Sweden, so I don't know what's going on over there. But so we kind of just were like, all right, you know, if things change, we'll talk. But they do still, I think they still have an offer that's acceptable for maybe some other players.
I was just going to say, like, if you're too big. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that, I think that door is still open for some other players. So I think, you know, my management will reach out to some players we think that'll fit with. So hopefully that can work out for some other players. And to be honest, I mean, I'm sure I'll still wear McCade at some events. I'll still wear Nike or Adidas unless mm-hmm. I land something else. I'm not going to be brand loyal to anyone. I'm going to wear what I want to wear.
And it doesn't have to be a disc by any means, but what's the wildest or crazy offer or opportunity, I'll use in air quotes, that has crossed your desk recently? I mean, somebody just with the, I don't know, give us something wild or out of the, maybe, or wild or unique. Has there been any, you know, anything like, hey, I own a limo service. I'll drive you around the whole country in a limo, which would be crazy, but anything crazy?
Oh man,
a shoelace sponsor. I mean, nothing.
No, shoot.
Doesn't get much wilder than beef jerky.
Okay.
I mean, that's definitely one of the most interesting for sure. I'm trying to look around and just get ideas of something.
That anybody's reached out to you and been like, hey,
well, so I've been reached out by companies and given free products and stuff like that, but nothing mm-hmm. I would say that's endorsement deal or anything. Like one of the most interesting was Blackwater. You ever heard of that?
Okay. Is that like the Mudwater people? Is it similar?
Not necessarily, but it's like, you'll see it in the store and it's like a bottle and it's like literally a black liquid and there it says BLK.
Okay.
They sent me cases of stuff, some water. And I don't know exactly what, but some of the flavored ones are really good. But like that's, I mean, I get hit up on Instagram a lot and they'll like send me products and things like that. But I can't think of anything.
Are you anywhere with Celsius? Well, you think about that. Are you anywhere? Is it Celsius? Are you in any conversations with them? Do you just enjoy their product right now?
Well, so that was a brand deal. I'm not a big fan of brand deals. I did that and I just... it was cool because, you know, in our contract, I was able to negotiate, you know, that they, I took less so they would donate more to the Paul McBeth Foundation. So I kind of put that in our deal, but no, I mean, I like the product. But we're not any further on anything as far as a sponsorship or contract. I know they were kind of switching through people at the same time too. So the one that I had connections with when I did my first deal with them is gone now. So it's like trying to re-get that connection. It's kind of difficult at times. That's one of the things I think becomes the hardest, because that's where Adidas and Adidas Terex was when that originally happened, was Diane ended up retiring. So now all of a sudden you lose your connection there, and you have to start all over and find the right person. And now you have to make that connection with them. So it's like, well, do they even like me? So if they like you, it's a lot easier. If they don't know or don't want to waste their time, then it's a little bit harder. But yeah, Celsius was a brand deal. So I did get paid for that, and I did have to do a little bit of Instagram posts and things like that. But I like it just being organic. That wasn't as fun to me, having to like, hey, here's my picture. Do you guys approve of it? Yes. Okay, cool. Oh, this is what I'm going to caption it. Is that okay? Yes. So it's like, I like just having my picture and thinking of my caption on the spot and be like, all right, that fits that. I want to do that and post it and not have to wait a day or a week potentially. So
okay.
Not fun for me.
But, yeah, I
but
mean,
there are definitely those opportunities for a lot of people.
Yeah. Do you see those becoming more frequent, for even if you don't like them, but like you just said, maybe for other players that would jump on that? Do you see those are popping up and becoming more of a thing for other players?
Yeah, I mean Brody's probably the biggest example. He just did that one with Fireball the other day, where he just threw a putter into a basket and said some things and whatnot. And I think Kona has done a couple. I don't know if she was at the pain point and things like that, but she's definitely done some. I'm sure there's some other people out there. Holly, I'm sure, has done plenty. But yeah, some people are just natural at that and they like doing that. But me, I'm more of the sponsorship, to where I want to perform and promote your company because I believe in your product. Not just, I don't drink, so I'm not going to do a Fireball ad, you know. But maybe there's something like, when I was down in Mexico, there was a lot of Bruce Willis commercials for Tecate, because they had their new zero alcohol beers, you know? So it's like, oh, that's something, you know, I could probably do, because it is zero alcohol, but I want to be cool and hang out with those people. So,
well, I mean, Johnny and I kind of made that joke when, you know, I mean, for those in the disc golf community that maybe haven't been out a few nights, people like Steve Rico, for instance, really enjoys his Fireball. And so when we saw, you know, you see the ad by Brody, and not thinking of Brody as someone that necessarily is a drinker, yeah, to someone that's in the know or maybe even cares or not, I don't know, thinks, oh, that seems a little out of character. And so I think you're saying that you really want to make sure it's a symbiotic, you know, mutual relationship if you're going to sign on with someone.
Yeah, and that's just me, you know.
Sure,
I don't
of
fault
course.
Anyone for wanting to do it too.
Yeah,
if they don't like the product, but someone's willing to pay them to do it, and it's no hassle to them. Why not?
Yeah, you know, you brought up Adidas Terex, and at one point, I think part of the relationship was them giving you a lot of product to be able to wear and to be able to use, and so on. But then you really wanted to, you know, get a little more serious with them, so to speak, and wanted, you know, a cash deal, something that involved actual compensation. Is there any of that discussion that comes back around, or is there any other, you know, leads that are kind of, you know, or do you find you get kind of stonewalled right at the, we don't really want to give you money, but we'll give you plenty of merch?
Well, so like Adidas, for example, I think I got paid 1 year. I think I got paid 2 years, but the last year I was there, I think I got paid like between 10 or 15,000 for the year from them, and like an unlimited amount of shoes. But if you look around disc golf, there's definitely way more than $10,000 to $15,000 worth of Adidas shoes out there that people are wearing. So it's more so that I didn't feel like I was getting my worth from them. But it was kind of like talking with Diane, it was like kind of like, hey, that's the maximum we can offer because that's our branch. We're not Adidas.
Sure.
So that's kind of the the wall that I ran into was, all right, I got to get from here to Adidas. But that connection and her retiring was kind of like a lot of things weren't working out in my favor. So that's kind of where that one ended to where I think they have a great shoe. I think a lot of companies have great shoes, but I think that one for me was the best overall because of the way that I plant, the way that I throw. It was just built and designed the way for my throwing style, to where a lot of people that kind of like, you'll see Calvin wears the fly knits, to where that's the shoe that works for him. You know, that's the one he
is work the word? Is work, does it really work for him?
I think he needs that, or else he'd blow out his ankles week after week. So,
okay.
So, I mean, that's some things that I've personally ran into, and it's like, at some point, you know, I think my value is worth more than $10,000 to $15,000 with them, so I have to walk away. I can't, mm-hmm. you know, I can't take that. And I've said this other times, but if I take a sponsorship for, I'm just going to go lower. If I take a sponsorship for $5,000, being one of the top players in the sport, that means the maximum we're going to pay someone is $5,000, because that's what the number one player in the world's getting. So that means you should get less, you know, to the people below yeah. me. And that I'm kind of valuing the sport. I'm kind of putting the ceiling on the sport right there. So, you know, I think a lot of players need to learn to say no to where, hey, it is $5,000, you know, $5,000 is $5,000, but like my value is worth more than that. So sometimes players have to walk away from that because, you know, if I can take the one deal for $50,000, that kind of allows those other five sponsors to where if I just took $5,000 for $5,000 or $10,000 for $5,000, you know, to get to that $50,000. Now, if I take $1,000 for $50,000, it allows those other nine companies to go find a player, and it kind of brings it up a little bit more too, to where, okay, if Paul's signing for $50,000, we should offer so-and-so $40,000, you know, and so-and-so $30,000. And that, I mean, that's my opinion.
Sure.
Is it the truth? Who knows? But that's just kind of how I like to look at it, is sometimes you do have to walk away from that to for the better of the sport.
Yeah, I think maybe early in the season in 2022, right before we get started off at a big event, you know, it's the lead card, and maybe just before the crowd and Jeff and everyone is quieted down the stands, you could just turn to the rest of the people on the lead card and say, hey, Chris Dickerson and KJ and Calvin, I just want you guys to know, I turned down $10,000 last night, and I did that for you. All right? I'm doing that for you guys.
I don't think that...
No. Okay, no. No, but the way you're looking at it makes perfect sense, and it's the exact same concept, really, of your contract with Discraft being public, because you then are kind of officially setting a bar or a standard, and if you set that bar low, then presumably everything else will be below it. So when you have that new bar yeah. set, it raises it's a new benchmark.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's kind of notable with the when I signed my first contract with Discraft. I don't know if I said this already, but when I signed my first deal with Discraft, you know, when the 4 years, $1 million, like that's, I mean, Ricky could still be at Latitude for all we know if those sure. numbers weren't public, but he sees his values a little bit higher now, so maybe I should go shop the market a little bit more. And maybe he got more at Innova. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, now I signed 10 years, $10 million. He's like, wait, my value is worth way more than what I'm getting here at Innova. Maybe I should go mm-hmm. shop the market some more. And now he's getting $1 million a year, the same amount. So, you know, I think with the numbers being public, it's definitely made a shift in that point, because now, who knows, maybe Ricky was making $50,000, $70,000 4 years ago, and now he's here making seven figures a year. So, you know, I think those numbers being in public do definitely help.
Does someone like a Simon or an Eagle, who, again, I don't think all the details were released necessarily, but they locked into a contract a couple years ago, and that was pre-COVID, pre-big disc golf boom and burst. Are they at any disadvantage? Is it fair for them to be upset, or do you feel like maybe behind the scenes they actually did renegotiate now that we've seen such an explosion, or is that something they just may have to ride out? Are they underpaid?
So one thing I really like to look at is other sports contracts, especially mm-hmm. baseball and things like that. You know, like in baseball, it's really popular to have a player option. You know, you have your guaranteed 3 years, and then maybe you have in your contract where you have 2 years of a player option after, to where if you're like, hey, I really like this team, I like the money I'm getting, I'm going to take this deal again where, you know, I make the same amount or more, but I'm here and I'm in this spot, and then so on and so on, to where with disc golf, you know, I think for us, we're going to have to have like renegotiation clauses in our contract, to where, you know, after my first 2 years, maybe it was just a year. I think first 2 years with Discraft, we renegotiated and had another contract. And then, you know, maybe after this coming year, we'll renegotiate again, to where my contract can't go down, but it can go up depending on the number. So it can grow with the sport and things like that, to where depending on who was a part of Eagle and Simon's contract, you never know what theirs says. You know, if they had someone representing them, they're going to look out for their best interest, because if they're getting a cut, they're going to want to maximize this contract to where, hey, we're going to renegotiate every 2 years, or we're going to evaluate it and renegotiate after every year, to where someone that's representing you and gets a cut of your contract or a percentage, they're going to want to put that stuff in there because they know that sports can grow. And even if it dips, they're going to put in like, it can't go down. It can only go up, you know? So that's kind of what these agents and lawyers and whatever else, you know, you have or whoever else you have representing you will do. So who knows what Eagles and Simons is. And I think Dismay is probably one of the hardest to get any numbers out of or things like that to hear any behind the scenes stuff. And that might just be because they were a part of Innova, you know, Innova, you don't hear any numbers ever coming out of there. So, maybe it's just something they've taken over as well with them.
A little bit of the culture, possibly. And I throw out the disclaimer every week that I have no rights or deserve to know the numbers. We like to know them because we're nosy and because that's human nature. I still don't feel like I deserve to know what you're making. It's honestly not my business, but clearly sports goes in the way that we, you know, that it's going that way.
No, I think the same thing. No one deserves to know what we're making, but it definitely helps bring eyes to the sports, you know, or eyes to the sport, you know, from the outside world. I think, you know, they see that number, and it's so weird that people just wow over money. But, but you know, you hear like someone's making $1 million throwing a disc in a park right now. Can you believe that? You know, like people are going to gonna get interested and just look over at it and see. Maybe they get hooked, maybe they're like, what is that? But they at least looked over there and saw us playing disc golf, so in some way. So it's one way right now.
So you're in this position, maybe in theory better than most. There's always a conversation, and it's in the chat board right now, so I'll bring it up. There's always a conversation of so and so should be getting a portion of the company, a share of the company, a cut. Part ownership is usually the phrase that gets thrown around. And specifically, Cody just, you know, said that about Eagle and Simon and Discmania. Is it fair to say that that is absolutely not commonplace in disc golf? And it's just kind of funny that that's an easy go-to solution for a lot of people? Or is it happening?
Yeah, I mean
do you own 68% of Discraft now? I mean, tell us.
I don't even think I could buy a portion of them if I wanted right now.
Okay.
But I don't know where that's even common practice.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think it's common practice in any company or any business, so to speak.
I don't feel like it is either. But it's funny that disc golf, you know, people said that of Kenny. You know, people said that, well, maybe of a Barry, you know, in his heyday. And
I mean, does it go back to the Prodigy days? Like,
I mean, you ask a Prodigy player if they saw any money from that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know how it worked. I was never a part of them, so I don't know. But
yeah, I don't.
You weren't good enough to be on the team, I heard. I heard they passed you up.
I don't need that. You know, we've been on the air for 7 years, like almost like right around the original, just after the original Prodigy stuff. We don't need to rehash that. Go back to episodes like 5 through 10, probably, folks, if you want to talk about that.
What's Dana Vici's percentage in Smashbox?
Oh, good call. Good Awkward. Call. Yeah. Ooh. He's sleeping.
No, but I mean, as far as players, I mean, I look at it as like we're privileged to have sponsorships, you know, in disc golf. Like we're as a player, we don't deserve to be sponsored. You know, it's a privilege to be sponsored, because I mean, they're willing to put their money invested into us because they feel like we're a good representation for their company. So I've never looked as it like, I deserve this. You know, it's always been a privilege to me. The only thing I deserve is if I get a first place trophy after shooting the best, you know, score at the tournament. So, but yeah, I don't understand the ownership part.
Okay, it's just a common, and I for some reason it's a very common thing said in disc golf.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, you know.
Yeah. One thing I was gonna add too is as players, we're athletes, we're disposable at the end of the day. You know, that's how it is. You know, the Discmania, Discraft, Innova, they're gonna be around when we're done as players. You know, they've been here before we started. They're going to be here when we're done. So I don't see any reason as a player. Maybe if we can help in the company in some way, sure. You know, maybe down the road we get some ownership, but that's going to be off the course stuff.
Well, and that's where I think even maybe that original conversation always came about with a Ken Climo over at Innova, as, you know, was he the Michael Jordan, you know, to Nike? You know, it was Ken Climo, that person at Innova, as he was racking up, you know, a dozen world titles. He clearly was helping put and keep Innova on the map and in the forefront of disc golf. Obviously, Innova had to be doing good, big things to keep that train rolling, too. And you can't attribute it all to one person or another. But I just feel like that's where one of the conversations always started, is like, well, you know, you'd hear people always talk about, well, Kenny has a certain percentage of Innova. And I never learned that to be actually true. That was something that got thrown around a lot. So here's the flip side of the question. As we talk about sponsorships, we have so many players, and you just said it's a privilege to be sponsored. Are we at a saturation point where everybody thinks they deserve not only a sponsorship, but B, like real money?
A six-figure sponsorship.
Six-figure. Even, you know, whether it's 20 grand or 50 grand or 70 grand, like, those were numbers that were unheard of 10 years ago, and now I think everybody thinks they deserve 50 grand just for being on a team and running, you know, and traveling around. Has it ballooned? Has it blossomed into, or is it, yeah. What's your take on that?
Yeah. I mean, if I was to put, like, my business hat on, like, I'm a manufacturer now, I want to sponsor the player that's going to bring me the most value to my company, whether it's as a spokesperson, whether it's as a player, getting in front of the media, who's going to represent my brand the most, my company the most. Because if they're bringing me in a lot of dollars, that means I can give them back a lot and make it in my sponsorship to them. So, I mean, I guess, yeah, it can get saturated, but I think I've said this for many years, that there's too many people sponsored in disc golf in the sense of some of these teams had 300 plus people on them, to where, you know, you let's just say you have $1 million and you kind of just flatten that out between 300 people. You know, it's kind of capped to where if you can get your athletes that are these spokespeople for you, or these players that are just continuing to win for you. I think as a company, that's what you really want to look for. So I don't want to say it's saturated, because we have so many disc manufacturers now to where you could have a star player on almost every team right now, you know, a name that you've heard of on every different team, to where maybe a company we've never heard of is offering to pay a player six figures or something like that. You know, we don't know what kind of money there is in all those other ones, but I think as these manufacturers continue to come into the sport, it kind of just shows that there is money in the sport if people are willing to invest in making a disc, because they do see a return in that, that there is money in the sport. It's just, if everyone goes to one company, then yeah, it might get saturated. But as people start to spread out, I think it kind of shows that there is a possibility for a lot of people to make a living doing this.
As long as I look at it from a manufacturer, as long as a player is serving a purpose or serving a profit. I mean, not every player, not every sponsored player has to bring you in a particular profit. But that would help. But I think your big players should. I mean, we've seen smaller, like the Discraft Underground. You know, is your average underground player bringing in a profit? Maybe, but that's difficult to tell.
Yeah, if you just want to look at like stocks or things like that and compare the players to that, you're going to invest in the one that you think is going to bring you the most return, not one that you know is going to sink, but you really like that company or you really like that stock. You're not just going to put it there to take a loss. You're going to want to get the one that makes the most profit. So that's kind of how I look at it as well. Is you know, they want their business at the end of the day. They want to be successful and they want to make a lot of money. And
yeah, and I think about it, and this is of no disrespect to anyone, but I think of your, and the bar continues to be raised, but your 930 rated FPO player, insert whomever's name, whatever, and your 1018, your 1020 rated MPO player, like they're clearly good, they clearly could potentially win on any given weekend. But are they worth $10,000, $20,000, $50,000? How much are they worth? And then you think about just how many of them are there. There's a lot of them now. And all this offseason, I hear so much conversation about worth and social media and performance and value, as you're saying, Paul. But, man, not everybody can get paid top dollar. And maybe that's just a harsh reality for some.
I mean, I think that's everywhere in the world. You know, not everyone's going to get the top job or the top dollar, like you said. And I mean, it's sports too, so it's entertainment. You know, we're all entertainers at the same time. You know, if you really like watching the movies and the recliners, you're going to pay top dollars over that instead of going to the seats that just fold up and they're hard plastic. Or sporting teams. You know, you see the Lakers tickets are way more than the Oklahoma City Thunder. One, because they're more entertaining and they have the names that you know, you know, so it is entertainment at the end of the day as well, because that's why the Pro Tour is around right now and they have their subscription is because people are willing to pay because they really enjoy disc golf and they want to watch the top players in the world.
An interesting phrase was uttered to me this weekend by a player, and they said, and it was talking about worth, it was talking about contracts, and they said, are we to be athletes or are we to be brand ambassadors or marketers? And
depends on what
clearly the answer is what both, a combination of both.
Yeah. They're the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
well, they meant it as like an athlete that is focused on just performing at their elite level, top peak performance, because you can attest to this. If you had to worry nothing about anything else on the planet other than throwing a frisbee every day and not touch one email or one foundation or one anything, like that's laser focused to being nothing but the athlete. But you can't be just that. You're more than that. Does it have to be a balance to get top dollar, right?
If that was it, I'd probably go insane. Like I'd get so bored, or I'd go so insane to where I just wouldn't have a life. But
you could be 1070 rated though.
Sure. I was close, but I still answered emails.
Quit flexing. We got it. Yeah. You can email in one hand and make a putt with the other. I got it.
It is definitely a mixture of both. I mean, it's like, I'm going to use UFC, for example. It's like Conor McGregor was both. You know, he was out there performing, and he was being that entertainer that people love to watch. But you look at somewhere like Kamaru Usman, who's absolutely winning and dominating, but he can't sell a fight worth anything. You know, like that's why Conor McGregor is making $20 million a fight, and Usman's maybe making two. You know, like if you can be both, that's what's going to get you the most. If you want to just be an athlete, you're going to probably just get an athlete contract. If you want to be just an entertainer or whatever, like you're probably just going to get that. But if you can do both, then you're going to get both of those contracts. So it is a fine line and it's really difficult, but that's where I keep going back to this. That's where the agent, the manager and all that becomes so important, because maybe they hire someone to help you with social media. Maybe they hire someone to do all these emails, to where now you can focus on only being that athlete because you have someone there helping you do all this stuff, to where, you know, it's not fun to spend money like that because you don't see that money come right back, but you're able to be that athlete even more and hopefully land more endorsements or sponsorships.
Yeah, it's a question I didn't quite get to asking Chris in a direct way, really was going to say, hey, if your social media presence had been already more established, would there have been even more value to you to Discraft or value to Discraft of you? You know, Chris is on social media, but he's not super active.
Yeah, but the answer is yes. I mean, if he had a huge social media presence, we know that he would have been worth even more. And his goal is to get to that position.
Yeah, if I had 2 million followers on Instagram, I'd probably make more than I make now. Might not all be from, it might not be from Discraft, but probably somewhere else.
You don't have to name names, but how many, unless you want to, here's your ask for the flex. How many, would you say legitimate celebrities and or legitimate sports figures have you bonded or made, had relationships with that, are like a real relationship? I know you have some with, a number of players, including everyone that was at the Pro-Am, but mm-hmm. How many top level athletes would you say that you have some form of a relationship
honestly friends with?
Maybe not quite like friends, like you're going to call each other after a round, but
friends,
yet.
Because that's not weird to say.
Okay.
So obviously the ones from the Pro-Am, I talk mm-hmm. a lot to Ben, Julian and stuff like that. But outside that, Lowry Markkanen. Super cool.
Yep.
Like you saw, Drew was just at the game yesterday. I'll be at his Charlotte's game on the 4th of February. And then Dylan Cease is at the Pro-Am.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the guy personally, but Nick Carl texted me the other day. He's like, you know how I know you're famous? He goes, the guy that just took second at the World Dart Championships follows you on Instagram.
Okay.
So I think he was flexing on Simon. With that.
I was just going to say, if he doesn't follow Simon, that would be the real kick, since Simon's, the hardcore dart player.
I was able to play around with Amir Garrett not that long ago, so that was cool.
Okay.
For the Cincinnati Reds. Those are the only ones I would really name off the top.
Okay. You've had, reach outs and at least chats or hellos and follows and whatnot with some other legitimate celebrities.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a nerd out too, but my favorite ones are I was able to have a conversation with one of the agents for Scott Boras and hear Scott Boras on a phone call actually talk and that was super cool. That's something I really nerded out with. And then talking to some other big agencies like Wasserman, they're top five in the world. So that stuff is fun to me. So,
yeah, yeah. I think that's exciting. I would love to sit in on a conversation, listen to Scott Boras try to negotiate or do so, or whatever he was doing, even if he was ordering a pizza,
That guy's so smart. And it's so funny because he reminds me of someone like Harold Duvall, to where it's I just know so much. I'm just so smart, but it just comes out of me. I can't help it. It's just how I talk. And he's like, I just talk facts. That's all I talk. And it's just I can never disagree with you.
And then there's also a handful of bands that either you have tickets with or a relationship with that you go back and forth with, right?
Yes, a lot of bands, yeah. My brother just went to a concert not that long ago. I think it's Wage War. Yeah, Wage War.
Okay.
He went to that concert and he found out one of the guys is a disc golfer and he's challenged us online a couple of times now. He's like, I'm practicing. I'm gonna get out there and take you guys out. So definitely a lot of bands and things like that. But
awesome. Is there anyone whether it's through your popularity or otherwise, anyone you really want to meet that you're aspiring or hoping to somehow connect with? Anyone in particular?
I mean, I think the big one for a lot of people would be, it used to be Kobe, but Tiger Woods would be a really cool one.
Okay.
And low key, I heard there's some, some cool things that could potentially happen with my foundation and some things over there. So we'll see, but that's definitely one that, I mean, I've looked up to my whole career. And but yeah, I mean, it's so funny because when I meet these people, it's just like they're regular people just like us.
Yeah.
So I mean, they're just really good at what they do.
Okay.
Just like so many people, like you guys too. So
yeah, you know, I mean, that was the vibe at the Pro-Am for certain. I mean, just hanging out, watching Dylan, you know, ask Ricky and Eagle for forehand tips. Yeah. It's like, dude, you're a professional baseball player. And he's like, yeah, I just, you know, I don't, and I'm thinking like, oh, okay, are they going to ask you for curveball tips later? I don't know. Like, what are you going to do? So,
also speaking, and we're going to start wrapping it up, but speaking of people that are really good at what they do, there is a lot of disc dyers out in the community. Mm-hmm. Pastry Dyes is local and is a huge help to me and to getting footage and whatnot. But, you and Dylan did a little bit of a dye contest / fundraiser. Break that all down for everyone.
Yeah. So, Dylan and I, we met up and it was like a last minute thing. I felt bad, but, yeah, I had the Plumbing Path Foundation trip going down to South America and Mexico and doing that whole little trip. So I thought, he's funny, 'cause he just loves buying discs. He just loves cool looking discs. And, okay. So I think he was showing off one of his dyed ones. And like you mentioned, pastry dyes, and a lot of people have reached out to me and just given me dyed discs. And I thought, hey, like, I'd love to give back in some way, but also donate and do it for a good cause at the same time. So I tossed the idea to Dylan, and he said, that'd be awesome. And he was starting his YouTube channel at the same time, so I thought this would be a good one to kind of just like, here, let's get some videos under your belt and you know, see how you do with something pretty simple. So threw the message out there to every disc dyer, disc artist, or as some like to be called, dyologists. So that was one of my favorite terms.
Wow. Okay. But, it's a new one for me. Yep,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But, so we just kind of threw it out there and said, hey, we're going to do this contest. Dylan and I, we're going to open up every package live or not live. We're open it up on camera and mm-hmm. talk about what we think about it, what we like about it. And maybe some just might just be like, what is this? But, we didn't run into many of those, but, just kind of like, hey, we want to showcase your art because this is art, you know, this is, you know, it's incredible work that they do. And, so we opened those up and we did a bunch of videos. He still has one more to drop, a fourth one, but he, unfortunately him and his family got COVID. So they kind of went, you know, went away for a little bit, but, so we opened up hundreds of packages and just kind of showcase a lot of these dyes. So if you do want to see, it's on Dylan Cease's YouTube channel. And not only did we open up all these discs and kind of just showcase these artists, we were able to take a majority of them down to these projects with the Plumbing Path Foundation to Mexico, Guatemala, and Colombia, and donate them to whether it's the club so they can give them out for prizes and future events, or just kids coming out for the first time ever. You know, it was amazing to get the love and support that we did from the disc dyers and just being able to contribute that. And Dylan and I did keep our favorites. So we did keep a handful of our favorites. So
okay.
I did do a video. I think I dropped it on my channel with the disc that I kept. I did definitely drop it. So that was a really cool, fun video, and just to see the support and just the incredible work that they do was really fun.
Yeah, yeah, that's again, that none of that is of my high interest, but and it's only because I'm not graphically inclined. But I love seeing what they can all do, and just the science and the technology and everything else
and the effort that they go through.
Yeah, it's
cutting all of the little pieces when they want to do.
It's all insane. Yeah.
It would be really cool to see how some of them do it too, and how they do the stencils and all the multicolors. Because you do see real small clips, but some of them I'm just like, how did you put 18 different colors on this one disc without mixing them.
it is amazing. And then one of the final shout outs or plugs that I want to get in there, recently she's taken to her own channel. She says she doesn't need you anymore, or you're just there for the views. I don't know, but Hannah starting her own YouTube channel. Give everyone what they should expect if they're out there looking for the Hannah Macbeth channel.
Yeah, so she's wanted to start her channel for probably a year or so now, for a long time. But, you know, I was kind of like, hey, like, let's just dedicate the time and focus to this one. And I think once it hit 100,000, that's kind of where she's like, all right, I'm doing my own thing. You know, this is successful. We got it there. Let me do my own thing. But I think she's going to be all over the board with her content. But right now, a lot of them are the behind-the-scenes kind of documentary of her trip. When we went down to Guatemala, I think she was working on one from Colombia. But I mean, I hear she's going to do from that to cooking, baking. Mm. I don't know what else, but she's got a list of ideas. I mean, she does her own. She does the podcast already, the party podcast, with Christine Jennings. So, I mean, she does a lot of stuff on her computer, a lot of like work with the Disc Golf Pro Tour and things like that. So, I have no clue what all she's going to put on it, but she is going to continue to make stuff and just, I mean, share her personality with everyone, because she truly loves editing videos. Like, you can see the effort she puts into the videos on my channel. Well, I should say our channel, but, you know, you see the effort that she puts into them, and she does make really good videos, because I can tell you the video that we dropped today, my brother and I were terrible at it, and she made it fun and entertaining. Like, awesome. We were miserable out there. She made it look like we had a good time. So,
All right. Or she's just really deceptive. One of the two. Or she's really good at it.
She's good. And she was very... I follow her on Instagram, as everybody should. And she was extremely happy and proud about her new purple light. She said, I feel like a real streamer now.
Yeah.
That you've got, you know, the same light that Terry maybe has.
Yep.
It's not even purple. Like, it's blue now. She changes it all the time. So that's it behind me. So it's...
Yeah.
It's got like 100 colors or something.
Getting all wild and crazy over there at the Macbeth house.
Yeah,
all right.
She actually did. She did blue to match you guys.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, Hannah. Thank you. She is so sweet.
Thoughtful.
Oh, she's changing it. She's in the other room.
There's the purple streamer.
Yeah, this is the color of my truck. Okay, so I have to say, of course, thank you. You guys had reached out and you know, volunteered to come in and share so much of this. Probably even you didn't even plan on sharing this much, but thank you so much for joining us. And you're right, it has been long. I mean, normally we have, like, you know, in the off seasons, it's big changes, and during the season, it's wins. And things have been a little slow. So, yeah. I mean,
I know the last time we were going to have you on, you had like a tooth thing and you couldn't make it. And I think it was right after USDGC.
Probably.
See, that's funny because so I had USDGC and then, Pro Tour, I had the tooth infection.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Did they pull it? No, they didn't pull it. I ended up getting a root canal the 2 days after the Pro Tour finals. So, yeah, during the Pro Tour, I was all. I don't take pills of any sort. Like, even aspirin is like a lot for me. And they had me on some stuff that week. That was
okay.
I don't ever want to do that again. But but yeah, to get through that event. But yeah, I was like, yeah, I didn't do many interviews after USDGC or Pro Tour. And then, like, after the season ended, I did not want to touch a disc for a long time. I was so burnt out from disc golf. The most I've ever been in my career. But I'm excited to get back into it now. Yeah, I think it had to do with the COVID stuff and then what the year was like, you know, going from like a 14 tournament year to back to a full tour. Mm-hmm. It did not seem like it was ever going to end. So when it did, I was done.
You were done.
About 6 or 8 weeks.
Yeah. Well, and that's awesome to hear that you recognize it and that, you know, that in turn will likely rejuvenate and reinvigorate you for this 2022 season. Someone on the comments did have the great question and said, where are you going? You said earlier you were going to go to some warmer weather. Are you going to head out to Cali with some family? Or are you going to get warmed up somewhere, practice?
Yeah, definitely jumping around the country for a little bit to go get to some warmer weather. I don't want to say where because I don't want to get bombarded.
Okay,
just in case,
understandable.
At the local area. But Yeah, my tour is going to start later than most too. I'm not starting until March.
Really?
I did take that long break, so I want to make sure I'm ready for the season. So Memorial will be my first event.
Okay, so, you're missing out, or you're choosing to skip the Vegas event and mm-hmm. gonna go. And Memorial is the week after Vegas, is that right?
Yeah,
the first weekend,
yep.
And then
yep. So no All Star, no Vegas. So
wow, interesting.
No Disc Golf Con.
We'll see. Maybe I'll make an appearance.
All right.
Hmm. Okay. Yep. Interesting.
The question I wanted to ask you. Originally, when you had released your tour, and this can be our last question, your tour schedule, you had said you were not going to play the major. Well, now the PBG has kind of done a little change to their format. Are you going to play the Champions Cup?
I am now. Yeah.
Okay.
I definitely put that out there and was like, I'm going to make it public that I'm not playing this. Like I've told them multiple times, like I'm not going to play this format. I'm not going to win a tournament and then go and win it again. Like that's my biggest fear is you go and win the tournament and then it's like, we're just kidding. Let's play some more disc golf. Like let's start over. Because that would suck for anyone.
Yeah.
You know, what's the point of winning the tournament if you still have to play again? I just was like, I mean, I'm not going to be made a joke out of this. Like, I want to go and play a major. If it's going to be a major, like, let us play. Let us compete.
Okay.
You know, the way that disc golf should be. I'm all for, if it's a straight-up match play event, then that's fine. You know, like, it's a match play event. Don't try to make them a weird format.
Some hybrid.
So I did. I mean, I did talk to some people at PDJ and let them know, like, I'm being serious. I'm not going to play this. Like, I already got approval from my sponsors, made sure and check everything. And they're like, yeah, if that's how you feel about it, that's okay with us. And you know, we're behind you in that. And they changed the format. So I'm not saying it was just me. I think a lot of players had that sentiment towards the PDJ, and that's what it was. But I might have been the only one to actually go public and say that.
Well, so now we're going to see.
I will be at that now.
Yeah, the straight up stroke play and the Champions Cup taking place, and looking forward to it.
I mean, if they want to try that format in some other tournament, go for it. Don't just do it first time ever in a major.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe it is a great format. We'll see when they test it out a C tier, like they suggest.
Sure. Good call.
Fantastic.
All right, Paul. Well, we're going to let you go. I know you got putting to do and stuff.
She's still awake.
Exactly.
She's on our boards. She's definitely awake. You can get just like 50 or 100 more putts in.
Yeah. And big shout out. Thank you, Hannah, who I know has been lurking around on the board and helping out. So thank you, Hannah. And Paul, we wish you the best and safe travels. And one way or another, I think I'll probably run into you in one of these warmer cities.
I'll see you in I'll either see you at Disc Golf Con or Memorial. We'll see.
Okay, or maybe both. Anything's possible. All right, everyone, that is five-time world champ Paul McBeth. Thanks for joining us. Have a good night. And as you know, you've got the special McBeth phone. You can call in anytime. We'll take your call.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, see ya.
Thanks, Paul.
Good night.
And well, that was a nice surprise.
Yeah, and in all honesty, I mean, obviously we maybe would have promoted it, but he just...
I heard that helps. When you promote Paul McBeth coming on your podcast, more people watch.
Apparently.
But for us, we're already so big, we just secretly have him on.
Yeah, yeah, keep it low-key. No, all seriousness, it was them that reached out in the middle of talking to Chris and said, you know, they would he would jump on and give a little update and insight because we haven't had him in a while, and we obviously appreciate it. Big shout-out, Dan Harback comes in and says, 2022 Player of the Year, six-time Worlds champ. Man, I mean, that could be Juliana Korver. That could be Paige Pierce.
Paul McBeth.
That could be Paul McBeth, but I think you're pulling for the last guess. That would only make sense. So, very, very cool. Oh, it's called a cameo. Thank you, the sidekick. We appreciate that. Awesome. I think with that, we can call the regular show just so we can take a breath for a moment, and then we have plenty of other topics that we can get into.
More disc golf to talk
in our after show. But it's been a heck of a night. We have so many viewers that are all in here taking it all in. Thank you guys for joining us. As always, you know, do all those YouTube things we request, like, share, subscribe, whatever you want to do. We appreciate you guys all being here. So, and
smash,
if you're not,
that subscribe button, ring that bell,
destroy it, smash it. That's what
we have
to
do.
Say. Yep.
Okay.
In all seriousness, here's how the format normally works. If you're new here, typically we have one or two guests on for what is our regular show. Then we will kind of wrap things up just for 90 seconds to 2 minutes, where we'll officially run some credits, and then we come right back. You don't have to click on anything else. We come right back. We have what's called an after show. That's where we even more enthusiastically react to things that come in from the chat boards. We also have a giveaway every single week. We have at least a giveaway. We'll be doing that tonight as well, as always. And in the after show, sometimes things are not disc golf related, and that's okay. So if you're not signed up or on board for that, well, then you can just sign off now. But you'll stick around because we'll probably say something stupid, or at least Johnny will.
100% guarantee one of the two of us will say something stupid or offensive.
All right, we're going to close it out. Huge, huge thanks to Brittany and Chris Dickerson, getting some insight and knowledge and the what 2022 has in store for them and all the exciting opportunities and this newest contract with him. Just love to hear the details. So thank you. And of course, again, thank you to Hannah and Paul McBath for joining us here in the show. Stick around. We'll be back in just a few minutes for the after show. For Johnny V and Terry Miller, the Disc Golf Guy, we'll see you in a moment when you step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/smashboxtv.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.